kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun show lined up. Cole's going to be here later on, but we're kicking things off. It is SummerSlam weekend, which means we got to talk wrestling. Tim Akabis, you are here. How are you doing?
Great. I am here and ready to wrestle.
Ready for wrestles?
Ready to hit the ropes. I'm ready to get slammed on the hardest part of the ring. What is SummerSlam? Is the biggest party of the summer. I don't know. It doesn't have the laundry list of nicknames like WrestleMania does.
The show of shows.
No, that's not this. No, this is just, it's SummerSlam. It's a big party. It's summer. Here we are. It's
party of the summer, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. It needs more pit bulls because I'm ready to go. Oh,
no,
oh.
No.
Oh, we, yo, yo. I love that song.
Oh.
WWE ruined me. I love that song.
Oh. It's like, oh.
I know. Oh. It hurts. It hurts that I like it.
Yeah. Any WrestleMania song, when it comes up after the fact, it's like you hear it so many times leading up, during the show, afterwards, and then it goes away for hopefully ever, never to be heard again.
This is going to be a magical weekend for me, because not only is it NXT TakeOver, not only is SummerSlam here, but I was in the store earlier today, fucking Crystal Pepsi's back.
The real important news that we're here to bring you.
Seriously. I mean, the video game shit can wait. It's going to wait, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
Delicious. What do you say we start?
Yes, let's go. Let's do it. There's so many matches. There's 18 matches to talk about.
Are there that many? I didn't even count them all.
I did some quick math here between the two events. I mean, that does include pre-show matches.
Holy
for
Christ.
SummerSlam. I mean, fucking SummerSlam starts at like 5 o'clock now or some shit, I think.
It's going until like 3 a.m.
Man, it's very long. And there's one match that should have just been on Raw, let's say. But anyways, we got to talk about TakeOver first, right?
Yeah, let's start with TakeOver. Are we going top of the card to the bottom of the card, or are we working our way up?
You're the boss, man. Probably bottom to top. That's usually how it goes.
Well, I don't know the exact order, so let's start things off. Velveteen Dream and EC3 are going to have a match.
Oh, man, a clash of personalities if there ever was one.
Just a little bit.
This should be great because every Velveteen Dream match is great. This is not EC3's TakeOver debut. He was in that ladder disaster.
Match was incredible, too.
Yeah. Well, it was good. When I say ladder disaster, I don't mean it was bad. I mean, it was a car wreck, you know, because bodies were broken and metal was twisted.
That sounds like an official tagline.
Yeah, he was not in the last one. And here he is going up against the Dream. Their segments have been great and hilarious. Their poolside rendezvous, Velveteen Dream getting slammed into a pool and then pretending to drown in 3 feet of water. It's been pretty great, and the match will also be great. And man, I would love for Dream to win one of his TakeOver matches that isn't against Cassius Ohno, but I just don't know here.
I think EC3 needs the win. I think if he's going to be a serious player in the division, in NXT, on the main roster, he needs to get a win here.
I guess. Yeah, it just seems like Dream is the new Tyler Breeze. Man. Well, it's like I'm looking at this card and Tyler Bates' name is right in front of my face. So that was hard to think of. like Tyler Breeze, who goes out there and has these great TakeOver matches and has a great personality and just doesn't win shit. But, you know, Velveteen Dream is a very young boy. EC3 already has some years. Yeah, I think EC3 will probably win. That is my thought. But I would always love to see the Dream win. But I think EC3 is heading up the card in some direction.
Yeah.
Probably challenging for a title of some sort at the next TakeOver. Maybe the Dream will be.
Who knows?
It kind of depends on who wins the main event. That's a real who knows what, but we'll get there.
That's the beauty with NXT in that it doesn't matter who wins or loses. Everyone always still feels important.
Yeah, everybody wins. Yeah. Yeah.
The happy, happy medium for everybody for the most part.
Yeah. Dream keeps losing, but he also keeps being awesome.
Indeed. God, he is so cool. I can't wait till he goes to the main roster and he gets absolutely butchered. Man. That's going to be an absolute catastrophe.
Oh, I hope not. Just keep him around NXT for a good long time. Don't feel the need to pull the trigger and send him up there. Let him keep making art. Let the dream go on.
I wish they would do that. Everyone looks like, ooh, I wonder who the next call-up is going to be. I wonder who the next call-up is going to be. It's like, why can't they just stay there forever?
Well, they need to make more money eventually, and they need to freshen up the main roster. I wish they wouldn't be hesitant to, like, I mean, we're heading into tangent territory, which is dangerous, but like, I miss, you know, old NXT when it was a little bit less of its old brand, of its own brand, a little more developmental, when, like, you know, Titus O'Neil would show up for a program with Neville, and like, you know, Rob Van Dam showed up for a match with Neville. But yeah, you just get main roster dudes who just show up for a cup of tea and then leave. And they got so many guys up there. It's like, and they do their tapings all together.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would it kill them for like some of those dudes, like fucking Apollo Crews, who's just there to lose tag matches for Titus Worldwide? Like, I thought he got called up too early besides that, but oh, you know,
God, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like some guys, it's just like, I mean, maybe whatever. I don't know, man. If they're happy, then they're happy. But
if they want to treat it as a third brand, I think we should be able to see some guys from the quote main roster go down to NXT. Like, let the Ascension go back down and enter the next tag tournament that they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Just hang out for a couple cycles. It'll be fine. They'll be okay.
Zack Ryder. He went down. He reinvented himself with the Hype Bros, and then went back to the main roster, and no one gives a fuck about him again.
He reinvented himself because they broke up the Hype Bros, and then he got injured and whatever. Anyway, we got to move.
Yeah. What the hell's Mojo Rawley doing anyway?
Losing. Or no, he beat up No Way Jose and Tyler Breeze recently. So there you go. Yeah,
he's losing. He is losing.
Yeah. It's hard to call it winning.
Talking about tag teams, we have the tag team championship, NXT tag team championship on the line with the Undisputed Era going against Mustache Mountain. How do you see this going?
I see the Undisputed Era winning, and that's it.
a lot of discussion on this one.
Well, Mustache Mountain, they won the kind of the surprise feel good win of the titles over in the UK, which was awesome. And, you know, I like those guys. They're good, even though, like, Trent Seven is kind of like weird sloppy dad. Yeah, but Tyler Bate is, you know, awesome. It just feels like what is heading for the Undisputed Era, or what's heading for the tag team titles, is War Raiders. So it makes sense to me that you're going to have it on slimy douchebags Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong. And have them trying to duck the War Raiders. That seems like where things would be headed. And, you know, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, they had their little reign, and they'll probably still get to be relevant, I hope, because they're cool. I like them as a tag team, as much as I hate their entrance music. but I see Undisputed Era hanging on for now.
I agree. I really don't see Mustache Mountain getting another win here. I think they had their feel-good moment. If anything, we might see them stick around in the tag picture, maybe see a sloppy ending and lead up to War Games for War Machine.
Oh, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's talk of that coming back as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We have the Women's Championship match, Shayna Baszler and Kairi Sane. I see Shayna just still holding on to it.
Yeah, me too. I have heard rumblings that, like, I don't know. I heard some rumblings for Kairi Sane, but, like, I feel like no. I feel like Shayna Baszler is going to be the champion heading into, because remember, in like a couple months here, there is Evolution happening, the all women's pay-per-view. And I think Shayna is the one you want to have the belt for that. I think you want to, I mean, like, some interaction has to be coming with Ronda Rousey, right? Between those two.
I would hope so.
Yeah. So I think you keep it on Shayna for now. I mean, I like Kairi Sane. Kairi Sane is awesome, but, yeah, like, it was pointed out because she had a match this past week, and she did three of the insane elbows in a row and then did her submission. It's like, I think the triple insane elbow is setting up for her getting caught out of one of them in in Shayna's submission, whatever they call the rear naked choke for her. Yeah, I think Shayna's going to hang on to it. And Shayna's like so good as asshole champion of the NXT women's division. Like, she's great. She is so great in that role.
I know a lot of people worry about having a long-term champ because Asuka held the championship for how fucking long, but I think it works just keeping it on Shayna for now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not, I don't think she'll keep it further than whatever the WrestleMania takeover is. Like, I think she'll be due to be called up by then. Like, it'll be a good long reign, and they're, you know, they're not making as much out of a streak. They're it's not going to go as far as Asuka's streak did for all they did with Asuka's streak in the end. So, but yeah, I think for now, yeah.
NXT North American Championship. We have Adam Cole, Bay Bay against Ricochet. This is going to be an amazing match. I don't know who's going to win, but it's going to be insane.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, it's like one of those things where does Undisputed Era hang on to all the belts at once? Do they have to hang on to all the belts at once? Is it a thing where Adam Cole loses and heads into an NXT championship feud? It's tough for me to see Ricochet losing. Like, he's been on the card like for a shorter amount of time. He's awesome. I mean, some people are already like, send him,
loves him.
Yeah, some people are already like, send him to the main roster, and I'm like, not yet.
No, because if they send him to the main roster right now, it's going to be 205 live.
Ugh. Yeah. No, I'd say, oh man, he is so much better than that.
He is.
Not that there's anything wrong with 205 live, but it's only on the network. It's like, we'll get to it. But yeah, no, I'd really like to see Ricochet win here. Again, it's always tough to say with Undisputed Era. Do they need all the belts all at once? Is that just the way it's going to be until they all lose them at one show? But I think Ricochet can win here and everything will be okay for the Undisputed Era.
Well, just to be a contrarian, I'll go against you and pick Adam Cole retaining on this one.
Yeah. I mean, those slimy scumbuckets might have jumped Aleister Black in the parking lot. Unknown.
We don't know. Which leads us to the NXT Championship. It was originally supposed to be Tommaso Ciampa against Aleister Black. Mm-hmm. And then shit went to hell, and it was a triple threat between Tommaso Ciampa, Aleister Black, and Johnny Gargano. Uh-huh. And then shit continued to go to hell, and now it is a last man standing match. A last man standing match between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. Before we get to that, what do you think happened with the attack on Aleister Black?
I think it. You know, it's tough to say. It's got, you know, it's Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens.
remember the old Hideo Itami parking lot brawl thing?
So it was Finn Balor, because that's who attacked Itami.
Yeah, I do like how they're making a whodunit out of it. God, that it makes it so interesting, because who knows what's going on? Who knows if and when? It doesn't feel like it's time for either of these dudes to head to the main roster yet. You know, maybe they're just keeping the door open for down the road. Like, I thought Aleister Black was going to be added to the main roster after this weekend, you know, but now he's injured. Do you think
this is the way to get him out of the match, to have him debut on the main roster instead?
Well, he's legit injured. I don't know if you know that. That's why he's out of the match. Yeah. He had a horrible groin injury at a live event. So they had to write him out last minute. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, a little bit of behind the scenes crap. Yeah, he was actually legitimately injured, and that's why they had to remove him from the match. So he was that. This was the plan, was the triple threat. That's real life is what sent things askew. It wasn't part of the story, as it were. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Undisputed Era seemed like if they're going to keep him around, you know, Adam Cole's as good as any dude to knock him out of NXT for good. But it seems like you can't just have him leave NXT on this at this point, with them making like a whole big deal out of it, you know, of who done it. Maybe it was Lars Sullivan. I love
how they did this angle, by the way, as well. How they have William Regal giving a backstage promo, and then someone comes in like, you have to check this out. The camera sticks with them, walking by all these people. It feels like you're just behind the scenes of a taping going on.
Johnny's just walking in the door. Undisputed Era's like, like they're leaving the drive-in with their milkshakes to go pick up their girls. Douchebags. I wonder when Bobby Fish is going to be back.
I don't know. As long as Kyle O'Reilly keeps playing his guitar belt.
My God. Yeah.
And so, then two other videos of, you know, wrestlers who are just filming on, quote, filming on their phones, and someone else who's running through, hey, what happened? What happened? What happened?
Yeah. Like, everybody's like standing around in the parking lot, and these are all the people that were around at the time. Who knows, man? Who knows?
Someone on Reddit pointed out. That what? On one of the videos, you mentioned William Regal, you see Johnny Gargano pass by.
Yep.
On a second video, way on the other end of what was going on, you saw Tommaso Ciampa pass by. And people are wondering, what if those two teamed up to beat up Aleister Black to get him out of the picture?
Yeah. Feels like storyline-wise that Ciampa would want to keep him in the picture just to help turn off Gargano. But who knows? I don't think they actually know who did it yet, you know, because they did have to pop up the storyline. They just know they want to have that thread open. I mean, they never closed it on Deo Itami. He was just injured for so long, and Kevin Owens went up to the main roster. They never got to close that storyline loop. So, meh.
Well, what about the match? Ciampa, Gargano, last man standing match. Is this going to be another 5-star classic?
Oh, I'm sure it is. Like, this is their third takeover in a row that they're main eventing. Like, this feud has been going on, been building for 3 years. It's like one of the best long running wrestling storylines that especially on a WWE program that I can think of. I mean, I think that year off helped it a lot, just helped it build up in that. Knowing that like Ciampa was going to come back at some point and just fuck up Johnny's shit. And he did. And yeah, Johnny,
and not only did he did that, but he won the goddamn championship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, yeah, Johnny won the unsanctioned match. So it doesn't count. It's not on the record. Ciampa has never lost to Gargano. Tommy Entertainment. Oh God. And then, and slowly but surely, Ciampa is, turn Johnny to the dark side, really, like Johnny just like forgoing anything in his desire to get at Ciampa and just becoming king asshole himself. Like he's turned him into what he hated the most. So now, last man standing match would arguably would have been their match last time if there wasn't a main roster last man standing match going on.
That's right.
Forgot
about that.
I think Ciampa wins for now.
Really?
Yeah, I think Ciampa wins. He holds onto the belt. They move these two away from each other for a while, and maybe Johnny comes back in a few takeovers for another rematch for it. But I love Ciampa as the champion because he's such a dick. His entrance music is literally the crowd booing him.
It's like, so good.
And it works. It's so great. Like everyone legitimately hates him. He's such an asshole. And I just I'd like to see him clash with some of the other good guys, you know, EC3 and Ricochet, whomever. On the roster, it's just a little less interesting to me it's cool if Johnny wins the day, like I'm not gonna complain, but it feels like Johnny's gone so far down the dark path, like now like he needs to like figure himself out again to come back and win the title.
That's makes my sense.
Yeah,
you think his anger is gonna get the best of him? And
yeah, I think it already has, unless they that comes about through the match, and that he, because that's how he lost last time. So maybe this will be, maybe that storyline will be in this match that he'll bring it around and win the title back from Ciampa.
Gargano will finally have his justice. I'm going Johnny. I think Johnny's finally going to pull it off. I think he's finally going to be champion. I think he's finally going to be happy. I think he needs it.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't completely melt down and start murdering people.
Yeah. It's just such a weird thing with NXT in general. And the question is always like, well, when is such and such going to get picked for the main roster? And just not knowing. And like SummerSlam, at post SummerSlam, that is a time when people usually get moving, you know?
Yeah.
And they start to freshen things up. Maybe it'll be
Who gets a call up?
Yeah, or if, but it's just so just Ciampa and Gargano are so linked together, you know. Who knows?
Do you think anyone from the show gets a call up after SummerSlam?
Man, I was thinking they would pull the Dream, and I'm like so terrified by that. That's what I was about to say, and then I stopped myself. But obviously Undisputed Era is going to go up as a unit, and they're going to go up probably when Bobby Fish is healthy. So they got a while yet. Like if Kairi Sane loses, maybe Kairi Sane goes up, you know? Ruin her life.
I think if Adam Cole wins,
Nikki Cross needs to get the hell out of NXT and get with Sanity. It's just so weird because, like, I feel like she was the leader of Sanity. Like, I know it's Eric Young, but it felt more like she was really towards the end, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, they need her. And
man, like, she's just shit the bed with Sanity or what?
I don't know if they've completely shit the bed yet, but they certainly haven't, like, made it fluffy and nice to sleep in. Is that where this metaphor is going, I guess? It feels like an afterthought. It's just like they advertised them, then it took forever for them to show up, and now just whatever. I mean, they had a good match with the New Day in this past week, but
yeah, that's kind of hard. They keep losing. They lose so much. They need something. They should have been the ones fighting the Bludgeon Brothers for the championship.
Yeah, maybe.
Man, maybe.
I don't know. Yeah. And then they got freaking what's his name, Killian Dane, wearing a weird singlet now.
That looks fucking awful.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, what happened to his barbarian gear? Now he's just, come on, give me his hairy awfulness. That's what we came here. That's what we paid good money for. All right.
If you ever go to a show, make sure you have a sign that says we paid for Killian's hairy awfulness.
Yeah. Either way, yeah, that's takeover. I wonder what faces in the crowd we might see this time around.
I don't know what big people on the indies are there that I could show
heard,
up.
What's his name? Matt Riddle.
Oh.
Yeah, I've heard he's the next that's on his way.
That could be big.
He's wrapping up dates, and like, I mean, he was kind of an inevitability, I feel like. Like when he first hit the indies, WWE was like, yeah, keep doing this for a while and then yeah, we'll talk to you. So I think that time has come to get him going. Probably gonna make him
WWE's
wear boots.
Finally okay with him with all the pot he smokes, huh?
Like, yeah, they maybe make some adjustments to the wellness policy, man.
Just ease up on the fines a bit.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's Takeover Brooklyn 4. I think it's gonna be an amazing show. I can't see any stinkers on the card at all.
No, it's like the real threat is like one of the matches. I don't want to say overperforming, but let's say overperforming, like killing the crowd for the next match. Like that happens sometimes at takeovers. Like,
true.
If the crowd is super into like Dream versus EC3, does that like, do they then have a hard time getting into Undisputed, the tag match or something like that? Or if the tag match is crazy, then are they flat for the women? You know,
on the plus side, they only have to worry about being hyped up for 2.5 hours.
Yes, that's a good level of hype. I think most people have that in them. It's about the limits of the human capacity for hype. On the other flip side of that.
On the flip side, SummerSlam happens on Sunday, starting at 5 in the goddamn afternoon.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Lasting quite possibly up until midnight, because fuck you, that is why. That is just why. First off, why?
Yeah. Yep. Kickoff show starts at 5. Actual matches start at 7. Yeah, it's a long show. On the upside, there is a lot of potentially very good matches on the show, and some that will probably be actually very good.
there are some definite legit possible match of the night contenders on here.
There's really only one thing that I'm not looking forward to. Well, one thing and one potential thing, I guess I should say.
I'm guessing the one thing is the main event.
No. All right. We'll get to it. All right. We'll get prelims. There. Kickoff show. You know what's on the kickoff show? Because I do.
Two matches, right?
Three matches, apparently.
Is there a third match?
Seems that way.
Well, it's
an hour and a half.
Well, the first one I have is Rusev and Lana versus Andrade, Cien Almas, and Zelina Vega.
Yeah, that is pre-show as fuck.
yeah, it is. What do you say about this one?
I mean, I love Rusev from main event to pre-show in the span of a month. That's how it goes. I think, side note, I really wish, like, I kind of really wish, no, I don't. But like Almas is so good. Like, he could already be challenging for the title. He is so good. And just like, people don't know it yet.
His match against AJ on SmackDown the other week was fantastic. Yeah,
that was just a taste of things to come. It's like, I hope they do the thing they did on NXT and just have him kind of come out of nowhere and like win the belt and suddenly be like totally legit. I'm just like, oh, right. This is why Almas is awesome. Anyway, they're going to win this match because Almas is awesome. And needs, I don't know, what's another loss for Rusev? But
yeah, seriously.
I mean, what's
Aiden
his name?
English get involved and fuck things up for Rusev?
Boy, seems like that's a strong possibility, doesn't it?
G. Willikers,
that seems to be, or intentionally fucks things up. You know, to stop it, it turns out that it's not unintended, it actually is intended. And, you know, then Rusev spins off from there and Andrade gets a win and things move on. But Andrade's great. Rusev is great. Should be a fun match. Hopefully Lana's, you know, the potential weak link, but she's been working hard. Like, I don't hate on Lana. She's great. She's a lot of fun. Not a great wrestler.
Lana is the best. Lana number one.
Yes. Yeah.
Next match on the kickoff show is the Raw Tag Team Championship match between the B Team and the Revival. Again, another kickoff match through and through.
Yeah, I really hope the Revival win. They are so goddamn good. Like, I appreciate that the B Team won. They won the belts. They got their kind of month in the sun. But man, like, the Revival, they are just so good. And like, it sucks that since they've gone to the main roster, it's like one was injured, then the other was injured. Like, it's taken them so long to like try to regain the momentum they had when they came off of NXT, you know, when they were awesome. They had so many incredible matches down there, and just like, and I'm sure that WWE has been reluctant to really put the spotlight on them because they're injured back to back. But I really hope that this is the moment. Win them belt. I'm looking at a lot of potential title changes here tonight, I should say. Win them belts and defend them.
Yeah.
Say yeah.
Say it's yeah. Like
their entrance theme sung by a chorus of bears. Yeah, I love those guys, so I'm rooting for them.
I'm with you on there. The B Team, I was kind of behind them, and then they changed their theme music, and now I just want them to go
it for
away.
Everybody. That theme music changed.
B Team, go, go, go. Why?
Ugh.
You could see the sadness in the faces of the crowd when that music hit.
Yeah.
Fucking Spirit Squad is back.
Yep. Also marked for the pre-show, I have Cedric Alexander, the Cruiserweight champion, defending against Drew Gulak.
Yeah, that makes sense. I didn't have that one listed as kickoff, but I did have it on the list. So, yeah, that makes sense that it's kickoff again.
Yeah, heaven forbid the Cruiserweight match or Cruiserweight Championship ever be defended, like, on an actual pay-per-view, you know? But, again, like, I don't know if you're aware, 205 Live has been pretty great ever since they got rid of Enzo and they brought in Drake Maverick. And, you know, they did the tournament leading up to WrestleMania. Like, they've had really great matches, good storylines. It's been a good show. It's been a really good show. They've been doing a lot better job of giving those guys characters and time to work.
My biggest problem is I just don't give any shits at all about Cedric Alexander.
Well, I got potential good news for you because I think he is getting smoked in this match. I mean, it's going to be competitive, but I think it is the time for Drew Gulak to come to power. Like, he has been arguably like the best guy on 205 Live since 205 Live started. Like, it started, he was just kind of like another dude there. Like, he was just one half of the jobber team with Tony Nese, but like, he's been flexible with like his character and his promos, and he's been funny and he's been serious and he's been really good in the ring. Like, he's just been a really good all around guy on that show. And I think it's time to get the belt off of Cedric. Like, Cedric's good. He's just kind of like a bland baby face dude. And Drew just has like so much personality and can be such a dick in the ring that I think it's time for a change of pace. Send like all those nice flippy baby faces on 205 Live at him. And yeah.
I hope so. I'm going to go with Drew just so that Cedric drops the belt.
Sure. Yeah.
Cedric is the reason that I barely watch 205. Like, I went to SmackDown and I didn't stick around for 205 Live because I didn't want to put up with Cedric Alexander. He just he bores me. Wow. He's such a bland, boring nothing.
All right.
He doesn't do it for me, man.
He's not my favorite guy on the show by like a long shot. I would have had Mustafa Ali win at WrestleMania. That is me. Yeah. But that is me. Onward to the show, the big show.
I think Hideo should have won the title.
Big show. Way before. Yeah, well, there's talk about another dude with injury problems.
Yeah, no shit. Oof. Main card, I don't know if any of these are in order. I'm just going off the lineup of like CBS Sports had a list of everything and it was easier to just copy paste. So
yeah.
First match on the card we're going to talk about, Shinsuke Nakamura, the United States champion, versus Jeff Hardy's testicles. Who's winning this one?
Seems weird, like Randy Orton not being involved in this when he's been so central on the show in the past few weeks. Possibly an RKO out of nowhere coming in here. Is there going to be like a double D, like it's some kind of DQ shenanigans, something like that? I don't know. Like, Jeff Hardy's been wrestling hurt. He's kind of looked like shit lately. Mm-hmm. God, please don't take the belt off of Shinsuke. But it's just like Randy Orton being in the mix as a dickhead again, which is great, by the way. This has like been prime Orton the past few weeks since he's come back. Most interesting Randy Orton in since long before you were born. so he's like a weird wild card in this match. I don't see Jeffrey winning. Like, it seems like he could probably use some time off more than a belt, and it seems like Nakamura could use a belt, desperately use a belt around his waist. You know,
and he looks good with that championship.
Yeah, it's just like it's still crazy to me. Like, if you would have gone back to like the night after the Royal Rumble and said that, like, yo, guess what? Neither Nakamura nor Asuka are going to win their respective titles.
You would have cried.
You would have been like, you would have thought that person was crazy and bet any amount of money that they were wrong. Like, it was like, okay, my bet is neither of them win the championships. They would have been like, what? Like, anyone would have taken that bet. Anybody. Like, no. Like, one or the other is going to win. And then it's like you put on the icing on the cake that Asuka not only would lose to Charlotte at WrestleMania, but lose multiple times to fucking Carmella.
Fucking Carmella.
And Asuka's not even on the card tonight. Oh, my God. What happened?
Jesus. Which I guess leads well into the SmackDown's Women's Championship match of Carmella in a triple threat against Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch. I personally don't give a fuck who wins this match as long as it is not Carmella.
Yeah, man, imagine how much more hype you'd be for this match if it was Asuka as champion versus Becky Lynch versus Charlotte Flair. Or
seriously,
if it was just Carmella versus Becky Lynch and there was no Charlotte Flair, as it was looking like for a long time. I mean, like, again, this seems like something where like a Becky Lynch Charlotte Flair feud is about to spin out of this. Will one of them have the title? I don't know. I would absolutely love to see Becky win. Like, yes. I think the crowd is ready for a big Becky win because since she was the initial SmackDown Women's Champion, she has not
done anything.
It's like she's been, you know, the bridesmaid to a lot of things. You know, she hasn't won the Money in the Bank. She hasn't won. She didn't win the Royal Rumble. She didn't win the Ladies Dray Battle Royal at WrestleMania. And, you know, I think they've done a good story. You know, she's been working hard. She's been getting wins. She earned her championship shot. And then, like, Charlotte just rolled in and just got a shot, you know, by pinning Carmella like everybody did. Even R-Truth knows that's the way you do it.
That was the fucking best when R-Truth
did. Yeah, it has to, I just don't know. I don't know who else you throw at Carmella. Like, I feel like one of them's got to win, and then, like, the Lynch versus Flair feud spins out of that with the title involved. I hope this is the end to Carmella's reign as much as you do. It seems like either her or what's her name, Alexa Bliss, has to lose here, since they're both, like, Alexa's a way better character and wrestler. But it feels like, but they're both kind of like chicken shitty heels, you know, they're like little squirrely squirmy girls, and like kind of having both champions as the same archetype is a little dull. So I hope one or the other loser, but I feel like, well, I don't know. We'll see. I hope Becky, please Becky.
That's where I'm putting my guess as well. I would love to see Becky take the championship that she has earned and deserves. Maybe see Charlotte turn on her after the match, do the whole hug her friend, and then
maybe Charlotte just goes full Flair here, you know, just heals it up, steals that title right out from under Becky's nose, and then the chase is on, you know?
Yeah.
Could
it's
happen.
It's just a shame that Asuka's not involved at all.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Yep. Moving on.
Daniel Bryan and The Miz.
This is going to be the main event of the show. The actual main event of the show.
This is what I would pin as the main event. They spent so much time with this on SmackDown. I would honestly love to see this main event the show, although we all know it's not going to happen. It would be amazing if it did.
I pity the match that's after this one, because this is going to be so freak. Like, one of the women's matches is going to get trotted out to die after this one when it should be the Corbin Balor match. But yeah, I mean, like, they've wrestled before, but it's been 3 years of build ever since Daniel Bryan was injured and had to retire. And Miz has been a dick to him, that, you know, epic segment on Talking Smack, and just so many like allusions to it. And then finally they're on the same brand. They've waited since WrestleMania to get them in the ring with one another. It's going to be an awesome match.
And who do you think wins it?
The Miz is going to win.
Really? You think Miz is going to win?
I think The Miz is going to win. I mean, there's
shenanigans
talk about,
are legit.
Light shenanigans. Like, not like outright shenanigans, but like just like cheatery enough that like in your heart of hearts, you know that like he's a cheater, but he can tout that like he won it squeaky clean. I mean, there's a lot of talk of, you know, Daniel Bryan's contract, I guess, is up in September, and whether he's going to stay with WWE or not. I think he is, because why wouldn't he?
I mean, that's the most stability for his family right there.
Yeah. You'd think. And just like after everything that he's through, and they're letting him wrestle, and like, you know, their doctor is taking care of him, blah, 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 blah. But I think, you know, obviously if he were leaving, he's going to leave on his back and The Miz is going to win. But if he's staying, I feel like you still have The Miz win, and you build to a rematch at WrestleMania, where then Daniel Bryan has his moment, you know, and possibly with The Miz holding a world heavyweight championship.
I was going to say, if they take it that far, they would have to have the championship involved.
They would have to have a belt involved. Yeah. But maybe not. But yeah, I think The Miz wins, and Daniel Bryan has to stew in it for a little bit longer. And The Miz is so good. He's like, he's such a jerk. Like, I've really come around on him. Like, ever since Hollywood Miz showed up, like, he's so up his own ass in like such an amazing way.
He really is.
It's just like, yeah, I think the Miz wins.
I gotta go with Daniel Bryan. I gotta go with D-Bry. I respect the beard. This has been too long for them to drop the ball and not give Daniel Bryan his big win over The Miz. Or if The Miz wins, it's going to be like a roll up or something shitty.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'll be some kind of tight holding, some kind of little cheap shot with the referee's back turned, like a low blow or something into the skull crushing finale. Some kind of thing.
If like Daniel Bryan loses, it'll be after whipping the shit out of The Miz for the entire match, and The Miz just squeaking out a cheap victory.
Yeah.
That was a SmackDown match.
Sure.
Next match listed is the Intercontinental Championship between Dolph Ziggler and Seth Rollins. Dolph Ziggler having Drew McIntyre in his corner. Seth Rollins having the returning Dean Ambrose in his corner. What happens here?
Oh, well, it feels like you have to have a new look Dean Ambrose get involved in some way, shape, or form. Also feels like too early for some kind of a swervy turn. So I would say maybe he just cancels out some Drew McIntyre interference and Seth Rollins wins and has the title again. And everything's great because Seth Rollins as champion was great. And Rollins is great. Great, great, great.
And then as he's celebrating with the championship, he gets dirty deeds.
Maybe. I don't think so. Not yet.
No, you don't think so?
Not yet. Yeah.
Dean Ambrose looked like he wanted to kill everybody, so I'm not expecting him to be a happy, cheery face.
Yeah. No, we'll see. We'll see. Might a lot of people are saying that, well, good, yay, goofy Ambrose is gone. But I guess time will tell. But yeah, you know, new look. It's good. So we'll see.
All I know is after this, I really hope we see Drew McIntyre up in the main event. That's where he deserves to be.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's someone who needed more time down in NXT. He was doing great in NXT, got injured, and then shot right up to the main roster, and he's kind of done nothing since.
I mean, he was already on the main roster once. One could argue he shouldn't have been in NXT to begin with.
I don't know. His rebirth in NXT was awesome.
Yeah, I didn't care for him in NXT at all.
No?
No. Thought he was like the worst champion. just did not care for him at all. I do like his pairing with Ziggler. I'm surprised they didn't do more tag stuff. Maybe they will in the future. Like, they seem to be a good tag team crew. Like, they had like their kind of tandem finisher thing going on. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens is next. What do you think goes on here?
It's like you look at this and you're like, well, if Strowman loses by any means, DQ, count out, anything, he loses the contract. So it's like you have to think that Kevin Owens finds some weird backdoor way to win and get the contract, right?
I mean, the smart thing would be, you know, Kevin Owens has been buddy-buddy with Jinder Mahal lately. I don't know why they have to keep Jinder Mahal on our goddamn TV screens. But you would think Kevin Owens would say to Jinder, hey, come in and punch me in the face during the match.
Yeah, possibly. It could be something just like that. But then you also wonder, it's like, well, why did you why have Braun Strowman win it to begin with if you weren't going to have him do anything with it? You know?
Yeah.
Whereas I would have said, like, the second Brock Lesnar is in the building, you have him cash it in on his head. and that's it, you know? But shenanigans, potential cash in tonight, who knows, you know?
So many unanswered questions that we won't know until then.
Yeah, it's a lot of wild cards, you know? Does Strowman hang on to the briefcase and cash in? Does Kevin win the briefcase and then cash in later? SummerSlam is, like, such a... feels like such a hot spot for cash-ins, you know, after the Randy Orton 1 year, especially the main event of SummerSlam. Like, that's always seems like an obvious prediction people make is like, oh man, whoever wins the belt, and then here comes the money in the bank.
Especially with this year,
man. Yeah.
Which we'll get to in a few minutes, but who is your pick for Strowman and Owens? I think Braun Strowman finds a way to outsmart Kevin Owens, who has been looking more and more like a dunce as weeks pass. And I think Braun Strowman gets the win and keeps his briefcase.
No, I think Kevin Owens wins and takes it. Like, he's such a good candidate for that briefcase because he's such a sneaky slime ball that it just seems like a good fit for him. That's what I think. A lot can go on tonight, but that's what I think.
Very true. The best news with Kevin Owens, though, is did you see WWE has their whole custom tees thing that they're doing now?
No.
Where they have, you can get a bunch of different of their shirt designs in different colors and different materials, and they brought back some retro designs, and I was able to order the KO duct tape shirt.
Oh, nice.
That I have absolutely loved and missed for ages now. So I am thrilled that I'm going to have a new KO duct tape shirt.
Cool.
So if he is Mr. Money in the Bank, I'll have a shirt to celebrate. <That's sweet. laughs> We've got the SmackDown Tag Team Championships between the Bludgeon Brothers and the New Day. I think this is going to be a squash and the Bludgeon Brothers keep them.
They already did that, though.
Yeah, and like, I think they're going to
That's how they won. No, oh, that is the worst case scenario. Like, what are you even doing with them? That's all they do to keep the titles. It's just like, ugh. God, I hope it's at least a competitive match. Like, I'm so bored with the Bludgies. Like, I do not. The
Bludgies.
It's like, and like, Luke Harper, you know he can do so much better. That dude is awesome. They're just coming out and winning these quick squashes. Like, what does it even matter if they do that? No, I'm like, it needs to be at least a competitive match. And I think the New Day is going to win.
Think they're getting the win?
Yes. Yeah. Become your, what is it, five time? I don't know how many times. Yeah. I think it's five time. They haven't had the titles in a long time, it feels like. So
you feel the power?
Yeah.
New Day.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. The Bludgies have just not really done it for me as much as it's just so weird. Those guys didn't like actually win the titles when they were in the Wyatt family.
That thing.
Yeah, it's so weird. But yeah, no, back as the Bludgeon Brothers, and then they just, yeah, squash shit at WrestleMania and just kind of have them.
Yeah. I guess we'll find out.
New Day's awesome. They have awesome matches. I'm ready for another New Day title run. It's been a while. It's been a minute.
I caught their shirt when I was at SmackDown. I caught Kofi's shirt.
Yay!
It's me and like one other guy both got a grip on the shirt, and then I yelled to the other guy. It's like, hey, there's a kid over here, and we just both gave it to this one little kid.
Aw,
yeah. Like that, the good kid man is going to remember that forever. The two of us were just, you know, some fat middle-aged dickheads who didn't need to have a sweaty man shirt. That little kid is going to treasure that.
Yeah, he probably already lost it.
Probably.
Fucking nah, dickhead. He'll treasure it.
Little prick.
put that shit on eBay.
Yeah,
gold digger.
I even saw it when I watched the show back on TV. You could see me like move the shirt over to the kid. Aww. I was like, that was me being a good person for once in my life.
Nice.
Yay. Finn Balor, Baron Corbin, should we care?
No, this should have been on Raw. Why is this here? This should
been. How is this not on the pre-show?
I know. It's just like, I mean, I guess this is like your obligatory cooldown match from something else, but Finn Balor should just win and that's it.
Can we just like get this, the demon back? Can just a surprise the demon Baron return Corbin. The demon Baron Corbin.
I forgot that was part of Finn Balor's shtick. Like, I don't think he hasn't done it since he came back from injury, has he?
No, he hasn't. He was going to with Wyatt.
Oh, right.
And then that went to shit.
Probably for the best.
Sister Abigail.
Or no, he did it again. He still did it against Styles, I think.
I don't remember.
I'm pretty sure. Because I think they'd already advertised the demon, so they were like, okay, we're going to do it. Maybe not. I don't remember now.
Me neither. It's been too long that I can't
recall. It was less than a year, so might as well be a lifetime.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's wearing the demon shit, so yeah.
You think Finn's going to come out as demon this time around?
No. Who needs demon for fucking Baron, Constable Baron Corbin?
Who wins this one?
Finn Balor, please. Baron Corbin has no business winning this match at all.
Which means I think Corbin's going to win it.
Oh, God, no. Please, no.
Just to be an asshole, he's going to win. And then he's going to take his shirt off, and you're going to see the sad face on his stomach.
Such a weird change of pace. It's like when Val Venus became Chief Morley. Remember that?
Yes.
He was like Chief of Staff Morley, but he went around as Chief Morley. It's like, what is Sean going
Morley.
Oh, my God, no.
Oh, God.
Kill me.
Then we got the three big matches of the night. Raw Women's Championship, Alexa Bliss versus Ronda Rousey. How does Ronda Rousey not win this match?
Shenanigans, interference, run-ins, bullshit. I hope they just do like one of her. I hope they just emulate like one of her better MMA matches where she just like judo throw, clamps on the armbar, done.
Just like a 7-second victory.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I want to see with her winning the title. You know, her first match was against Nia. That's a little different. You know, Nia's the bit bigger. Man, where's she been lately?
Who cares?
Wow. Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ronda should just truck her here. But again, I won't be surprised if Alexa Bliss finds a way to squirm out of it again.
I think both of the women need to lose.
Yeah.
I think for the sake of the Evolution pay-per-view, having the title on Ronda Rousey just gets that much more attention. And
yeah,
as much as I want Becky Lynch to win, I think having the title on Charlotte Flair gives them that much more attention. So true. I think both the women's titles need to change.
Okay.
Doc Havoc in our chat room saying, I think they just need to make out. That is setting the women ahead.
Jeez. You belong in the Attitude Era.
That is progress.
Yeah.
Progress.
Yeah, it's tough. Just tough to see Ronda not just trucking her if it's going to, if it's like some long competitive match. I don't know, man.
That would make me so happy to see like a 10-second victory.
Yeah, those are great. Those are fun. Lopsided victories, man. They're fun to do every now and then. Just like, it's fine. Alexa will be fine. Just have Ronda kill her.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. WWE Championship match, AJ Styles and Samoa Joe, the Battle of TNA. What do you see going on here?
I would like to see, I think it's Joe time. AJ Styles had the belt since like last year. Good long time. I think I'm looking for a lot of title changes at SummerSlam, just like to freshen up a lot of the divisions, you know.
There are a lot of long-standing champions.
Yeah, I mean, like Bliss, while she hasn't held the belt for a long time, this time she has been the champion a lot, you know, over the course of the past 2 years on both SmackDown and Raw. She always has the belt. AJ's had it for over a year. The Bludgies have had it since WrestleMania. Cedric's had it for a long time.
I just love the Bludgies.
The Bludgies. You know, I guess the IC title could go either way. Obviously, I want the Shinsuke to retain because that's fine. But yeah, I'm ready for a new champion. I mean, like Samoa Joe is dope. I think he would be a great dude with the title. I think it's the time. Have him win, choke his ass out, or do something slightly underhanded. He's not above that shit.
I agree. I love Samoa Joe. I think this is his time. I would love to see Samoa Joe just be the WWE champion for, you know, the career that he's had. To have the championship of championships, I think would be amazing for him, and I'm rooting for him. I love AJ Styles, but I love me some Samoa Joe too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Plus, we share the same name. Joe's got to root for Joe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Final match of the night, which I'm sure is going to be the final match of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Universal Championship again, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns. We get to see this bullshit again. First off, do you care?
Oh, man, I just want it to be over with. I read something distressing today that Brock is meeting with like WWE higher ups before SummerSlam for more contract negotiations. So like, the possibility is still out there that he is going to retain and continue to be Universal Champion, which is just like, please, no. Like, I want, I've never wanted Roman Reigns to win a match more or a cash in or something. I just don't want Brock Lesnar as champion anymore. I don't want to have to see Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar ever again in my life. I just want it to be over. Let Roman win. Let it be over with. Let's put it to bed and move on from there, either with Roman as champion, sure, fine, great, acceptable, or with a cash in, but let this be it. Let it be done. Let it be over with. And I feel like I said the same shit at fucking WrestleMania, man. Just let Roman win. Let it be done.
Just let the nightmare be over.
Yeah. Though there is also like, you know, the asshole inside me who's like, let Brock Lesnar just win clean and leave with the belt just so everyone can be so mad.
You gotta wonder if that's a possibility because he'll be going into a UFC fight. Does Vince want him to have the WWE championship or the Universal championship while fighting for the UFC championship.
I mean, honestly, I just wish they'd abolish the Universal Championship and just make the Intercontinental Championship the belt of Raw, because it basically has been for most of the last year and a half.
Or bring back the big gold belt. Bring back the, what was it?
Oh, I missed that belt. The World Championship. Yeah, the WCW belt. Yeah, it's a great belt.
That was a good belt.
Yeah.
How do you see the ending, though? Do you really see Lesnar losing to Roman Reigns clean?
I could see that, yeah. I hope to see that. I would love to see that. That would be a great thing for me to see. The last thing I want to see is Brock Lesnar. If Brock Lesnar beats Roman Reigns and then wins a cash-in, that would be pretty great. But...
I just want it to be over. I just want the Brock Reigns. I never want to see this match again. It's so important to me, WWE. Never again. Don't be like rolling into fucking WrestleMania last year with like, or next year with Roman Reigns winning the Rumble. Worst case scenario.
Oh, God.
Please no. So he can challenge Brock Lesnar more time. Just no. Just it's have been Brock a lifetime. In. Have Brock in for spotlight matches. He doesn't need to have the belt all the time. He just doesn't. He just doesn't.
You want to know what I want to see happen at the end of the night? I want to see Brock Lesnar win by shenanigans. Something happens with Paul Heyman getting involved, ends up costing Roman the match. Roman gets pissed off, beats the shit out of Brock Lesnar after the match. And then you hear, Braun!
Yeah.
And Braun Strowman comes down, cashes in, and the nightmare is over.
That's also a great way for it to end. Fine with that. I accept your terms.
What if Kevin Owens wins as you predict? Would you like the same scenario of Brock acceptable. Lesnar winning?
Oh my God, that would be great. Oh my God, that would be so great if like Kevin Owens like came in and chaired Lesnar and won the title off him and then was like living in fear of Brock Lesnar.
Oh God, that'd be amazing.
Oh yeah.
Because then you would have the chase between Braun Strowman and Kevin Owens over the belt.
Yeah.
Because of the money in the bank.
It just sucks as you'd end up inevitably with like, yeah, between Braun and whatever and this, that, and the other thing. Like I just see like Kevin Owens losing a lot of non-title matches, losing a lot of tags, getting the challenger has pinned the champion, like winning by DQ, like his first Universal title reign, if anyone remembers that, like a lot of shenanigans along the way, which I just want to see, like just win matches, man. Kevin Owens is great. Ah, well.
So match of the night, who do you think is going to have best match of the night?
The best match of the night. I'm going to say, oh man, Daniel Bryan versus The Miz will probably be the most exciting, like most emotional match of the night. As far as quality goes, I'm thinking it'll either be Styles versus Joe or Ziggler versus Rollins. The Rollins versus Ziggler at the last pay-per-view did not go that well, though that was kind of out of their hands.
Yeah.
But yeah, so somewhere in there.
Yeah, I'm going with Bryan and Miz. I think they're going to tear the house down.
Yeah. Yeah, strong potential there. Very good.
Either way, it is going to be
a rematch. Who knows?
It is going to be an awesome fucking weekend.
It's going to be a long weekend. Yeah. Yeah, and awesome. It will be awesome as well.
Like how you led with long.
Yeah. Well, yes. It's like I usually watch my takeover Sunday morning. So, like, I watched the takeover and I watched all of SummerSlam in the same day. So,
You are a glutton for punishment.
I'm a glutton for awesome wrestling.
You just need 19 hours of wrestling in a single day.
Man, ask me how much New Japan I watched in the last month.
How much?
A lot. There's a lot of G1 Climax tournament to watch, sir. And I didn't even watch all of it.
I haven't watched any of it. I've been slipping with the non-WWE stuff. I just don't have time for it, and I hate
it. Yeah, no, it's... It had to kind of do abridged NXT watchings because most of my wrestle watch time has been watching Climax matches, but now that's over. So, yeah.
I've been playing games for this fucking show.
Oh, yeah. Fucking games. Video games. What are those about?
I don't know. We should probably get to the video game stuff, though. So we're going to take a quick break in the action, play some music. We're going to come back with more show. Tim, are you going to stick around for that or are you
heading out? No, I got to go.
You got to go. Tim, it has been wonderful having you on doing
Absolutely.
This.
Love talking wrestling for an hour. I never get to do this.
Survivor Series, make another date.
Heck yeah. You fucking know it.
Awesome. You got any final words?
please let the Brock, please, that's, let the Reigns Lesnar thing be over, please. That's like it right there.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks again to Tim for coming on and chatting wrassles with me. That doesn't happen nearly enough on this show. Although I'm sure some people would mind never happening on the show. But joining me now, Cole, how are you doing?
I think that's going to be pretty self-evident.
You sound fantastic.
I don't know how much higher my voice can possibly go, but here we are.
We'll find out. So what's going on? What's with the voice today?
I've got some sinus drainage bullshit happening, and so I've got a sore throat, and I lost my voice. So
we're gonna call you Minnie Mouse this episode.
Yeah. It's pretty fucking awful.
Should we just dive into things, or do you want to talk about how you're doing this week?
No, we can just go. I just imagine that by the time we're done with this shit, it's just gonna be gone.
Final now game to talk about. Cole, tell us about this one.
Whisper. Don't make me mad. I'll give you the whispering of a lifetime.
All right, and $15 on that. What do you think?
Fuck you.
We're hoping that the cough drop supply holds out so we don't get that far.
Hope so. Well, we'll jump right into the news then. The big news this week, let's see, what kind of big news do we have this week? For our listeners, I'm sure the big thing of the week is Diablo 3 is officially announced for the Nintendo Switch. It was leaked out by Forbes earlier this week, but was later confirmed that Diablo 3 Eternal Collection will release on the Switch in 2018.
I just laugh. It's like,
I thought you said hey.
No, but there's like, there just seems to be some kind of collection of games sticking Eternal in the name somewhere lately. And so I'm just tickled by it.
So you beeped at me.
Yeah. The best I can do.
But the collection will include the Reaper of Souls and the Rise of the Necromancer content, as well as all of the updates to the game so far. Will support 4 players on a single Switch, as well as 4 Switches local play without an online connection, as well as the expected online co-op as well. There will even be special items in the game, like a special Ganondorf armor set from The Legend of Zelda, because of course there will be.
So wait, I've never played a Switch. How do you hook up 4? Is it like 2 sets of Joy-Cons or?
No, just 4 systems next to each other, like how people would play Game Boys together.
Yeah, but didn't you say like 4 on a single system?
Yeah, with like extra controllers.
Yeah, I didn't know like how the Joy-Cons worked with that because of the whole there's 2 of them aspect.
Yeah, and you can hook up 2 more Joy-Con, or you can hook up just 4 normal controllers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you could either play 4 people on a single Switch, or you can get 4 Switches local together, which would be cool as shit. I'm sure that's going to be fun at MAGFest.
That's going to be what everybody's doing in MAGFest. It's like, you're just going to walk into like a hotel lobby, and it's just going to be a bunch of nerds sitting there on Switches playing Diablo.
Diablo and Smash Brothers.
Basically. Like, there'll be 1 hotel for the Diablo fans, 1 for the Smash fans.
That wouldn't shock me.
You can't cross the streams.
Vertically impaired saying 1 for Monster Hunter as well. Yeah, probably. Everyone needs the Monster Hunter going. Oh, boy. What other news? The PlayStation VR is officially at 3 million units sold, so that's pretty cool. Although, when you compare it to 80 million PS4s, you still got to wonder.
Still a pretty low adoption rate.
Yeah.
Although it's about 2.75 million more than I anticipated.
You really didn't have high hopes for PSVR, did you?
Not at all. I lived through the VR days back in the day, so like you see that fag come and go every so often. You're just like, eh. But you did expect, like, the whole thing with the Oculus, everybody was like, oh, over the Oculus, wasn't it? When it was first announced and in production and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it flopped too, basically. So, I mean, in a way, I wasn't entirely wrong. It didn't take over and there's not one in everybody's home. But it was still adopted a little more than I anticipated.
Yeah. 3 million is still pretty good, though, I think.
What's the actual math on that, though? What's 3 million of 80 million?
I don't know
how to math.
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
6.6 and some change.
Maybe.
That's a, yeah, like under 7%. So somebody's going to correct me on that. That's okay.
It's okay. You're sick.
Yeah. We can forgive any fuckery and just be like, she can't even talk right.
She's delirious. The cough drops are making her delirious. From low adoption to high adoption, sales of Grand Theft Auto 5 are approaching 100 million units sold. What the fuck?
Who doesn't even have this? Besides me, I don't have Grand Theft Auto, but I'm one of those weird gamers who's like, opposes basically everything the game stands for.
Yeah.
I am not a Grand Theft Auto fan.
It's just how many units of a game can sell? Like, who's buying it still?
that's what I want to know. It's like, who's left?
From what I'm hearing, there's people who, when the game goes on sale with the shark cards and the Megalodon cards and shit like that,
what are
people,
those?
Like the GTA, the online cash.
Oh, okay.
So basically the money transaction, real money microtransactions.
It's cheaper to buy the game to get the online currency.
The game bundled with the currency than just the currency.
Yeah. So it's cheaper to do that as opposed to just buy the currency.
Yeah. So there's another sale.
And that's why they're so. But then what the fuck are they doing with their extra copy of the game?
It just doesn't exist. It's digital. So
oh,
you already have it.
Then I'm surprised we don't see more GTA giveaways.
Well, no, it's like buying something on the Xbox store where you don't get a code for the game. You're just buying the game with the currency.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they're just buying multiple copies of the game and just that extra copy of the game just goes nowhere.
That is really weird.
Yeah. Doc Havoc saying the only way he'd get it if it's on sale for under $20. I think it's been $20, hasn't it?
I would say so. But would you like buy it 17 times? Because you know there's somebody that's like, they're going to hear this if anybody listened to us. And they'd be like, this bitch talking about buying that game 17 times. Like I'd only buy it 17 times. Because you know there's somebody that's bought it like 24 and I'm lowballing.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I just wanted an excuse to say ballin' with this voice. You're welcome.
I was drinking.
You're welcome.
Oh, man. Let's talk about some additions. Faye has been added to the EA Access Vault this week, so Xbox One players with EA Access can now play Faye.
And Faye. I hope people do, because it's so good.
Indeed it is. Graveyard Keeper launched this week direct to Xbox Game Pass, and I know that was a surprise.
That was ninja move right there. Like, I kept wondering, I always wonder when we get games to review, and they're like, oh, it's been out in early access on Steam or whatever, but shit's embargoed. And I'm like, why? Everybody's done seen it. And so it's kind of a pain in my ass, because I want to tell everybody this game I'm playing is fucking awesome. Bye, voice. Fucking awesome. And I can't, because I'm fucking embargoed. So I assume the whole embargo thing was for the sake of not letting people know it was going to be in Game Pass, so they would buy it. And then be
I didn't even know it was going to be on Game Pass. I got the press release on it, and unless I missed it, I didn't see anything about Game Pass in it.
No, my press release didn't have anything about Game Pass either.
That was just a surprise for everybody.
A ninja move. But I'm glad they did it, even though I tend to think Game Pass is a really good option for games that are launching, indie games especially, with multiplayer. I've said it before during reviews and stuff, that, you know, we need more indie games with multiplayer, but then there's also the downfall of, like, Deformers, where just because it's got multiplayer doesn't mean anybody's playing it. Game Pass kind of opens that path up and lets people try out these games that they otherwise wouldn't have. Because you see it all over Twitter all the time. And they're like, oh, I've got so many games. Look how many games I've got installed. And it's like 15 games and it's all AAAs. And you're like, dude, you have no idea what you're even missing, but you wouldn't try it because it's an indie. And Game Pass kind of clears the brush from that road for people, you know?
Yeah.
So, in a way, I was like, there's not a whole lot of reason for Graveyard Keeper to go into Game Pass because it doesn't need that online boost. But then you got to realize that Stardew Valley kind of runs that town management farming sim genre, and everything gets compared to Stardew Valley when it's that kind of a game. Even when I reviewed Castaway Paradise, I was just like, oh, and like Stardew Valley, and I shouldn't do that, but I did. But you know that other people are going to look at it and go, well, it's just a Stardew Valley ripoff, why should I play it?
Yeah.
Even though it's, you know, got the whole macabre morbid aspect. But at least by launching into Game Pass, they're going to go, but I like Stardew Valley, so maybe I'll like this.
I'll give it a go.
Because there's no cost risk involved.
No.
You've already paid for Game Pass, so might as well play everything that's there.
Everything in Game Pass is a fuck it, why not?
Basically.
Speaking of Game Pass, there's a couple of games that are going to be leaving Game Pass at the end of August. I'm not sure if you heard the list or not.
I haven't. Lay it on me. What do I need to complete?
PES 2018, which we all knew that was going to be a limited time deal. 10 Second Ninja X, The Bridge, Galaga Legions DX, Soul Calibur 2 HD, Tekken Tag Tournament 2, and Pac-Man Museum.
Okay, I need to play The Bridge because that was on my want to play list, and I kind of just assumed it was going to be there forever. And my voice is cracking like I'm a 12-year-old.
Hey, guys.
I'm trying to talk too much. But, I just kind of assumed that The Bridge would be there. So if it's not, then I need to get my ass in gear and play that one.
Play it and get your weirdly numbered achievements while you can.
There has been a rash of weirdly numbered achievements. I have to stop and think if any of those are embargoed. I'm not mentioning names just because I don't remember.
Oh, but Castaway Paradise was one, and then Coffee Crisis, mm-hmm. That was another one.
Graveyard Keeper has odd-numbered achievements.
Does it?
I think so, yeah. Nice.
We'll be talking about that one a lot more
in a minute, little bit. Yeah. Have her recite all the digits of... Oh, Lord.
Oh, Jesus. they're pushing you to keep talking, huh? Oh, vertically impaired, you wily bastard.
I kind of owe him, too, because he gave me a sub.
Well, you better look up pi, then. We'll give you 100 digits. Go. 3.14, I don't know anymore.
Nailed it.
Two games were added to the Xbox backward compatibility lineup this week, with Tomb Raider Legend and Tomb Raider Anniversary both being added. And I believe that makes all of the 360 Tomb Raider games playable.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised. It makes sense that they would focus on getting Tomb Raider added to Game Pass. Or not Game Pass, but back compat. I got Game Pass on the brain now. they're going to want to try to push the Tomb Raider franchise as hard as possible. Get people playing it before the new one comes out.
Yeah, and good way to move units of the old games as well.
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't be surprised if there will be a Tomb Raider for Games with Gold next month.
Oh, that wouldn't shock me either. Although I think someone pointed out that Legend and Anniversary, I'm not sure if they still are, but they were on sale for $2 each.
Wow.
Yeah. So if that sale's still going on by the time you hear this, you might want to grab those since they're both playable on Xbox One now. Let's see. Dark Souls Remastered is finally hitting the Nintendo Switch on October 19th, along with the Solaire of Astora amiibo, which reminds me I need to get in touch with GameStop and update my address for that amiibo. So some old lady at my old place isn't like, what the hell's this little toy?
The family that lived here before must have had a child.
A man-child.
Close enough.
Last bit of news I have is that THQ Nordic has acquired the rights to Time Splitters as well as the Second Sight IP, which is exciting news for Time Splitters fans.
I have never played Time Splitters, but I know that it has a very active fan base.
Good games.
That is my extent, the extent of my knowledge for Time Splitters, is that the fans for that game are rabid.
Yeah, and from what I'm hearing, they're going to be looking into re-releasing some of the classic Time Splitter games.
I would expect that. At least the re-release in some form, if they don't like straight up full on remaster it.
That'd be so good.
THQ Nordic is like rolling right now with trying to recapture all their old properties and stuff. It's really impressive to see. And you're just like, yeah, we struggle, but bitch, give us our shit back.
Well, no, THQ struggled, but we're taking their shit over.
Yeah, we're taking their shit and your lunch money too. And then you're just like, you know what? It's one of those rags to riches stories. So here you go.
Oh, boy.
Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, that's all the news I got, though, this week. Any news you want to talk about?
No.
Like I should be asking you to talk
about. I don't want to talk about anything.
I thought you wanted to talk about Overcooked.
I do want to talk about Overcooked because Overcooked is getting a thing. I love Overcooked.
I'll say it so you don't have to.
Okay.
Overcooked is going to be getting a new game plus mode added to it so that if you've already gotten 3 stars on all the levels, like you have, Cole, you're able to go back, get even harder limits, goals, and get up to 4 stars on levels now.
You're going to throw more rice at Jacob.
Fucking Jacob.
Down for this.
I don't know if a date's been announced on that yet, but whenever it's out, I'm sure we'll keep you updated on it.
I don't need a day. I just need, I need it yesterday.
You need it yesterday. Oh, boy. Before we jump onto the reviews, we actually have a quick guest review to take care of. Michael Barodi ended up writing us a tiny little review of 1979 Revolution Black Friday. You interested in hearing that?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
He says, he's talking about the mix play on Mixer.
Oh, okay.
It has the interactivity. He says, Mixer recently renamed Mixer Interactive to Mixplay. This allows your viewers or friends watching you to play 1979 The Revolution Black Friday by interacting with the game. They take votes to change the path your character takes. This, I feel, added a dimension to this game that kept me interested in playing it. If you're a history buff, and I hope this game is accurate, you should take this game up. It's a way to learn about a revolution in Iran back before I was born. Does this affect me in any way? I don't think so, but hey, it's nice to know what happened now. It paints the world of its time in a different light, how the people stood up to the king, how a brother, son, boyfriend stood up to the choices he will make. The story's a good one, as I felt I was watching a movie. If you like collectibles in the form of taking photos, this game is for you. Search your way through this game with the help of your friends live on Mixer. I say get this game.
Very nice. Yeah, I really liked it. And it is historically accurate. They even have sequences where you like take photographs of the protests, and then after you take the photograph, it comes up and it shows you the photograph that it was, the real photograph from the real protest that your photograph is based on. And then it gives you all kinds of information. You can actually listen to like replicas of the speeches that were given. They're hidden around the game as little, you know, Easter egg collectible things. And so you can actually listen to them. And one of the cool things, too, is that you choose when you find one and you choose to listen to it, you choose if you want to listen to it in English, if you're translated to English or whatever your translated language is, or if you want to listen to it in the original Farsi.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool as hell. So, should we dive into reviews?
Yes.
Are you sure? Can you handle this?
I am down as long as my cough drop stash hangs out, and I got about 6 more.
Cool. So first game to talk about tonight is called Graveyard Keeper, developed by Lazy Bear Games, published by Tiny Build, released August 15th on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99, also launched as a part of Xbox Game Pass. From the creators of Punch Club comes Graveyard Keeper, the most inaccurate medieval cemetery management sim of all time. Cole, what is this game?
This game is, like I mentioned earlier, pretty much very similar to Stardew Valley. If you've played Stardew Valley, you kind of played Graveyard Keeper, but with less skulls. So for all the cheerful, like, optimism of Stardew Valley, you could just throw all that out the window. Because Graveyard Keeper is going to put you in the role of the keeper. He never gets a name. Or at least not as far as I've made it. He ain't got no name, and I've got a lot of time put in this game. So you play as the keeper, who is like, he kind of looks like your classic hipster lumberjack dude. And he has an accident when he's trying to get home to his lady friend. And when he comes to, he's kind of just like in this medieval kingdom with no idea what the fuck's going on. And the first person he talks to is the bishop of the church there in town, who explains that, well, since you're here, you're going to be our new graveyard keeper. And that's where you start the game off, as opposed to inheriting your grandfather's farm, like in Stardew. Ta-da! Here's the cemetery. Good luck.
Nice.
The cemetery tutorial is actually really well explained. There's the whole process of, you have to collect a body, you have to autopsy the body, and you're able to, with the guidance of a disembodied skull named Jerry, you learn that you can cut a little flesh off of the bodies and use it as you see fit.
Interesting. And then
once you've done your autopsy, you take the body to the cemetery. You have to craft a grave plot, dig it up, put the body in it, cover it back up. And here's the trick. Everybody is assigned a random number of skulls. Red skulls. Red skulls are negative traits. So if the guy was kind of a dick in his life, the body, whoever it belonged to, was kind of a dick, they'll have more negative red skulls. And white skulls are for good traits. Ideally, you want the people that are in your cemetery to have been fairly decent people so that you can get a better graveyard score.
Hmm.
You can kind of shift the bodies. They're random when they arrive. You don't have any control over that. You can kind of shift if they've only got one or two negative traits. Then you can remove the red skulls by taking out, say, the flesh or the heart or the brain, and you might get rid of a red skull when you remove an organ. The thing is that this is kind of a mini game and it's all just luck based. When the body's traits are generated, then the skulls and stuff are assigned to different parts of the body, and you don't have any way to know which parts you're going to remove, how it's going to affect it. So you kind of just roll in the dice. But you can, if you're careful, you can get rid of all the negative traits on a body before you bury it. Once you bury it, then the grave gets a rating, and you can raise the rating up by adding decorations, like adding flowers, adding a headstone, repairing headstones when they get broken. But for all that talk, actually building up your cemetery is a pretty small part of the game, and it's kind of just your starting point. You'll need to collect timber, and you'll need to collect stone, and you'll need to collect iron, you'll need to build bridges and help witches, and there's an inquisition going on, and the inquisitor will want you to help find witches so that he can have a burning party.
Burning party.
You
oh my
you
god.
Can, you know, I mentioned the meat The cutting up the flesh, you can cook it and eat it and use it for energy, or you can get a stamp from the church so that you're allowed to sell meat.
Oh, God.
Because it's a rare thing because of the whole Inquisition kingdom shittiness going on. You can sell meat. Or if you aren't getting enough corpses and you need bodies, poison the water supply.
Oh, Jesus.
And so you have more bodies show up. The funny thing, though, it's so morbid and macabre and absurd, but it's funny. Like, the corpses are brought to you by a talking donkey. And in the beginning, as they should be. And in the beginning, he's like, whatever, take your corpses and get out of here. But there comes a point where he's like, look, I know you're getting rich off this. I want a piece of the pie. And he gives you a box, and you have to craft the box and put it on your land. And he won't leave your corpses unless you give him 5 carrots for them.
Oh, my God.
So you have to make sure that your farm is doing okay and that you're keeping enough carrots.
So what growing. Is Stardew Valley?
Yeah. The farm aspect is very minimal. Like, there's a pretty decent garden plot that you can start with, but I kind of found that I don't really use more than, like, a half of it. And it's mostly just for carrots to keep that bitch happy so I can have corpses. there is still more, though. And I think this is what amazes me about it, is that there's so much. Like, on top of everything else you're trying to do, you have to run a church. Because really? after you get your cemetery to a certain rating, the bishop goes, sure, it's your place now. And you have to roll with it and just do what you can. And you have to actually learn how to write so that you can write sermons. And you have to learn how to study the plants and the materials that you find so that you can use them for alchemy, so that you can continue to just unlock more and more abilities. My biggest complaint about the game is that it does extremely well at explaining the tutorial for the skulls, and then nothing else gets explained.
Oh, boy.
It just, so
kind,
just
of kind of throws you into things.
It's just like, I hope you played Stardew Valley. So you know what to do, or otherwise you're fucked. And it's kind of stressful because you'll be going through your skill tree and unlocking different perks and stuff, and then you're sitting there going, okay, I unlocked a stonecutter. Where the fuck is that? Because there's so many different places, and they're all sectioned off. So, like, the alchemy lab is underneath the church, and your cellar is under your house, and that's where you can ferment wine and beer. And then your kitchen is obviously in your house, and that's where you have to cook. You can't cook and craft foodstuffs while you're in the alchemy lab. So each area that's destined for a certain task has, like, a little podium with a blueprint on it. And that's what you go to build for that area. And it doesn't ever tell you where it's going to put the shit you need to build.
Oh,
and then if you go on a spree and do like I do and like unlock 15 things at once, and then you're like, okay, but now how do I use that shit? The one good thing is that because the game was in early access, there's a wiki. And I was able to look up a lot of stuff that I couldn't figure out how to do using the wiki for it. The downside is it was in early access, and I was playing the full game, and there was stuff that wasn't in the wiki yet.
Oh, boy.
So I did spend, like, I was already close to the end of some storylines and finding myself stuck because I didn't have alchemy, but I had no idea how to get alchemy. And it was something I should have done day one, and I just didn't know. because it didn't tell you. It doesn't explain that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, there's a bridge way over on the other side of the map, but good luck getting there. So,
yeah. Well, lack of direction aside in the game, $20 on it. What do you think of it?
I do give it a big buy it, even with it being in Game Pass. I think you should buy it. It's a lot of fun. It's very quirky and morbid. And I just really enjoyed the humor involved with it all. You know, you can appreciate when you've got a headless or a bodiless skeleton head, you know, the skull, and he's like, you know, I'll tell you what you want to know, but first bring me wine. And then you bring him wine, and he's like, yeah, I can't even taste this. It was really funny. I do want to point out, I had some errors. Like, I had some screen tearing and frame rate problems. And I hope that they patched. I haven't played it today, but yesterday I was still having them. And it was definitely a bigger issue the longer you played. And this is a game that you're not going to play for 10 and 15 minutes. This is a game you're going to play for several hours in a row. And you're definitely getting past that 2 or 3 hour mark. The game really starts to struggle.
So it might have a memory leak in there or something.
Yeah. It's like my voice. Other than that, I had so much fun, and I really just enjoyed the odd, quirky humor of it all. I think you should buy it. And cool. If not, at least play it in Game Pass.
Sounds good. I like how even with a fucked up throat, you're still going longer than you should.
I know it, but that game's just a lot of, there's a lot there to talk about. Like, I'm sitting here thinking of all the things I didn't mention.
Well, don't mention them, because next game to talk about is called Hero Defense, developed by Happy Tuesday, published by Head Up Games, released August 15th on Xbox One, August 16th on PC and PS4 for $29.99. Creeps crumble, heroes rise, command a team of renegade heroes and impale, slash, tear, and burn through legions of undead, hell-bent on world domination. Your mission, to defeat the world's most powerful vampire, Count Necrosis. Hero Defense, as you would expect by the name, is a tower defense style game, although there is a lot more emphasis on manipulating the heroes that you have and their positioning, as opposed to just placing more and more turrets. Most tower defense games, you have a budget, you have to put out your turrets, you have to level up those turrets, add more and more and more and more and more turrets, and hope that you could take out the waves that are coming at you. In this game, you only get like 5 total units, and it's up to you to manage and maintain those units. When you start off, you only have the one. They grow as you progress through the game. You have to level them up and maintain them during the battles and move them as needed. So in most tower defense games, if you set something at the start of the pathway and the enemies get past that, you're going to have to build more after that. In this one, you could just command your units to run somewhere else and continue fighting. Every character that you have has a radius that shows how far away they can attack, as you would expect in a tower defense game. And it's always about moving your characters, keeping them within range of the enemies that you're trying to take out, and clearing the waves before they get to the destination and wreck your shit. Like I said, the big difference in this one isn't about the number of units and how much stuff you could put down. It is about using the few that you have to your advantage. Every different character has a different color assigned to it, and every different enemy wave has a color assigned to it, where each character that matches the color of the enemy wave is going to deal significantly more damage. Like, you know, the crossbow guy is going to be better at, like, the phantoms. I can't even remember. I can't remember which does which. Like, the one that throws bombs is going to be stronger against certain types. The one that casts magic is going to be stronger against skeletons, stuff like that. So you want to make sure that you are positioning your characters where you need them to be, especially in stages that have multiple pathways that could split up, or they could branch into and meet up into one. Levels, there are from what I remember, 14 levels that you can go through. Each of the levels has four different difficulties. Checking my notes here. Yeah, four different difficulty levels that you could replay, as well as bonus objectives like beating a stage without losing any townspeople, or beating a stage without using any consumables, beating a stage using only one hero, which that shit gets hard. As you complete goals like that, you'll earn money, you'll earn gems that can be used to upgrade your characters, that can upgrade your town. You have a town that, as you unlock different areas through the game, they give you more abilities, like the academy. The more leveled up your academy is, the more experience you'll earn in battle. You can also level up your characters in there, applying skill points to different abilities that the characters have to make them stronger in battle. There's a forge in the game, which lets you apply runes to your characters, where if you have a certain rune in your first level up slot, when you level up your character in the battle, that rune will become active. Like, it might give them more strength, or it might give them a larger aiming radius. And it resets every time you start a new battle, where, you know, you earn these orbs, which is your, I guess, the in-battle currency, which that's how you summon other people. That is how you level up your characters. So they have the in-level or the in-match levels, as well as the overall level. There's a lot of micromanaging in this game, if you can't tell.
Sounds like it.
Yeah, but it's a lot of fun. I'm really enjoying it.
Here's the question, though. Does it have a wiki?
Not that I know of. I don't really go to wikis too often to look for stuff. But it has a lot of content in the game, which is a very, very good thing. I mentioned that they have four different difficulty levels, and you'll be forced into going to some of those older levels and replaying them on higher difficulties to earn the star that you get for completing it, so that you can progress further in the main story. Mm. There's just a lot of content there. My biggest concern with this game is the price. $30 on this does seem a bit steep. I was kind of hoping we would see a $20 price tag on this thing. I can't say for those concerned. There is enough content to justify the price, so I'm not concerned about having enough there to play. You'll definitely get your money's worth out of what's there. It's just if that price tag is going to be too steep to jump in to begin with. The other gripe I have is I wish missions had a quick start. Like, I would set my characters up and realize, oh, I should have brought this guy out instead of this one because the next wave has red enemies and I brought out my blue and my orange characters. I just got to restart. And instead of just a restart option, you had to quit back to the main menu and go all the way back in through all the steps, get back in there and get the enemies going again. So it's just minor things. But again, the price tag is probably going to be the biggest hurdle. Like I said, if you enjoy these types of games, I enjoy the twist on it, on where you're managing your towers, your proverbial towers, instead of just adding more and throwing more stuff at the enemies. You have to actually manage and stick with it instead of watching it happen and hoping for the best.
Makes sense.
Yeah, for $30, though, overall, I give it a try. It a lot of fun. Again, I just worry about the price.
$30 price tags are generally pretty hard to choke down.
Yeah. And just on cue, one of my cats took a shit and it is absolutely rancid. So, oh my God. Oh my God. Piddles. Jesus Christ, cat. Oh my God. Holy God, this is so bad.
What do you feed that cat?
I don't know. I think she's sick. We've had a cat with diarrhea lately, and I think I found the culprit just swaggering in here. Side note, thanks No Time for the 100 bitties. We appreciate you.
Now Joe can buy more kitty litter.
Piddles, Jesus Christ. Oh my God, this is rancid. My eyes are burning. Holy shit. Next game to talk about, if we can, is called Coffee Crisis, developed and published by Megacat Studios, released August 15th on Xbox One for $10.99, previously available on Sega Genesis as a physical game cartridge on the Sega Genesis.
Man.
Believe it or not. Coffee Crisis is a neo-rogue brawler that puts you in the shoes of the only baristas on Earth with enough heavy metal in their veins to fend off an alien assault. Play solo or join up with a friend to fight across 8 unique locations ranging from your coffee house HQ to the far reaches of outer space. Cole, tell us about this one.
So that explanation is pretty much it. There is a race of aliens, and I'm going to fuck this pronunciation up even if my voice was normal. It's the Smirklians. They have come to Earth, and they have 3 goals. They want to take our heavy metal music, they want to take our free Wi-Fi, and they want to take our coffee.
Those sons of bitches.
I don't like coffee. They can have that.
But our Wi-Fi? But
I would be mad about the Wi-Fi. So, naturally, since they want to take our coffee, it is up to our heavy metal fan baristas from Black Forge Coffee to stop the invasion, fuck up some aliens, fuck up some possessed grannies and grampies, and just beat them up their way through several scenes until they fight the bosses and save the world. It is a 2.5D side-scrolling beat-em-up. There's not a whole lot of room for glitz and glam for a game that was intended for Sega Genesis. And that's fine. It's your, you know, classic 16-bit glory art style that anybody that enjoys retro games is going to look at and go, fuck yes.
Very much so.
There are
this is as traditional side-scrolling brawler as you can get. Unfortunately, I think it has some of the pitfalls that come with it. The hit detection can be kind of iffy. It's one of those things where in Final Fight, where if you're just a pixel further back than the enemy, you're not going to hit him, but he can magically still hit you.
And I've never had any fucking idea what I was hitting the whole time. I was like, oh, look, a horde of grannies. I'm just going to jump in the middle of them and hope for the best. That's kind of just how I played the game, and it worked out. It was fine.
Yeah, it was fun just beating the shit out of things.
But you're right. If you're like just a smidge one way or the other, they're going to hit the shit out of you, and there ain't anything you can do about it. I will say, though, I played on easy mode because I'm a bitch and I have arthritis. So I played on easy mode, and it was really forgiving in that, you know, I could get knocked out 3 times and still come back. But now if I got knocked out a 4th time, fuck you, do it over. So it was at least pretty fair, and it kind of eased the learning curve. There's the ability to pick up weapons that are on the ground. Like, you could pick up a sign. My voice is cracking.
No, what? Really? Why?
Yeah. I started to say sign and I just lost it.
There's some cool weapons you could pick up in the game. I've picked up electric guitars that shoot out projectiles. I picked up alien arms that shoot out projectiles. Of course, they have like signs and boards that you could pick up and use.
Yeah. There was just stuff all over the place that you could use. I think it made the game way easier. Like, if you had that issue where you were off a little one way or the other, if you had a sign or some kind of weapon, it didn't fucking matter. You were still going to send them flying. So that made it a little easier if there was something to help you beat people up. There's also other power-ups like invincibility. There's a modifier that makes, like, some kind of ghost cowgirl things go flying across the screen and trample and stuff. I couldn't explain 90% of what happens in this game. It's quirky and it's weird, but that's also kind of the beauty of it.
Yeah, it is off the wall crazy. The modifiers will just pop in randomly, where the screen might change colors, or you might get a fisheye view or a CRT effect. It is just
some of those are crazy. Incredibly difficult. Like the not the night vision. I had one that made it look like it was all drawn on graph paper.
Oh, I saw that one.
And I was like, this is hard, and I'm too old for this.
Something else this game brings back from the 16-bit glory days are passwords for your levels. If you can't get through the whole game in one sitting, write down the level password at the end and pick up where you left off.
I still remember my password for where I was.
And you even get an achievement if you enter a level password.
Yeah. Yay, achievements.
Yeah. Speaking of the achievements, people are going to love these. Every single achievement in the game is worth 22 points.
Yeah.
I love it.
That was the other one I was trying to think of that had the odd numbers.
I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I love when people do weird achievement numbers.
At least it's all of them are 22. I think that's a little more creative than just having random threes. Like, at least I knew if I knocked out five, I was still going to end up with an even number.
True.
It was fine.
Very true. Something else I want to point out. Soundtrack in this game is fucking metal as shit. Mm-hmm.
And if you, obviously on Xbox, you can't get the soundtrack. But if you're on Steam, you can get it as DLC for $1.99.
Yes.
That's it. $1.99.
Which I might have to do just to play it on this show.
I went and looked it up just out of curiosity.
Yeah, I'm sad it's not available on Bandcamp or anything. They have it on SoundCloud that you could listen to, but I'd rather just be able to like buy and own it.
Yeah. And I think one of the most interesting things about this game is, I mean, the game itself is good and it's fun and everything, but the backstory behind how it was made is where I was just like, this is amazing, because it's legit like on cartridges and shit. And just, they went through a ton of effort to restore this game to what it was for Sega Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And still make it enjoyable for modern day audiences.
Well, all that said, $11, what do you think of it?
Are you able to buy it at that price? Yeah.
I agree. It's a lot of fun. It'll probably kick your ass a few times after you kick its ass a few times, and it's just mm-hmm. goofy and fun.
Yep. You can't be mad when you're beating up on grannies. Although I did feel a little bad about the aliens in the wheelchairs.
Oh, come on. They were shooting at you.
It's true.
Next game to talk about is called Wailing Heights, developed and published by Outsider Games, released August 14th on PS4, August 15th on Xbox One for $11.99. After being invited to a gig in a town no one's ever heard of, Francis Finkelstein is trapped in a holding cell charged with the crime of being alive. A mysterious cellmate teaches you to body hop, leaving your corpse in a cell and jumping from ghost to vampire to werewolf to zombie. Each character brings you one step closer to getting your body out of lockup and getting the hell out of Wailing Heights. But of course, it is never that easy. Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in a review, and here's what she's got to say.
Wait a second. Wait. Who developed this?
Oh, developed and published by Outsider Games.
It sounds so much like Flipping Death. I was just like, what?
Sorry. Nope, different
Go
game.
Go ahead.
Anyway, Wailing Heights is a point-and-click adventure game that has a heavy metal focus. You play as Finkelstein, the manager of the band The Deadbeats. You end up in a town of the dead. It holds vampires, werewolves, ghosts, and zombies, and now, well, you too. You learn how to move your soul from your human body into the bodies of the undead via a musical possession wheel. The wheel has you create a song that involves the undead's name, something they hate, and something they love. With that, you end up being able to take over the bodies of a number of people to help you solve all the little puzzles you need to solve to get yourself free. The game is rather fun. The art is okay. The story is basic but good. You're a human in a non-human area, which is illegal, but upon leaving your body and going into someone else's body, your body disappears, so you have to go find it while doing odd jobs for others to get hints. None of the gameplay was too hard. Nothing uses absurd logic, so if something seemed like it would work, it did. Pretty good game that even kids could enjoy. Granted, it does occasionally use some foul language. It's pretty lighthearted and upbeat, and it was really fun to play. The only issues I've had with the game are both large and small issue at once. Sometimes the audio, the characters' voices are buggered. Sometimes it sounds like the people are far away. Sometimes they mute themselves. Sometimes they don't say what the game says they're saying. These are only small problem bits, but it's still annoying. Most of the gameplay's fine, and the voiceovers and the voice actors are pretty good. This isn't a problem that's going to be fixed, because the problem existed in the Steam version of the game from what I've seen in the forums, and it doesn't seem like it was ever fixed. Not a huge issue, since again, most of the gameplay's fine, just an annoyance that honestly shouldn't exist at this point. Been out for a couple of years now, but it's just been ported to Xbox One and PS4. On Steam, it's $10, and on console, it's $12 for both the PS4 and Xbox One. I say it's worth it. It's fairly fun. It will take some time to complete. After all, it's a point and click. The music in it, I just loved it. So yeah, that one audio issue, which only really affects occasional conversations, not musical bits, wasn't enough to remotely even put this one off for me. Sounds nice. Good. Sounds awesome, actually.
Yeah, I'd like, play that.
Like a heavy metal flipping death.
Yeah, I'd play that.
Well, you can, because it's on Xbox One.
Yay!
Hooray! Next game is something you did play called Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, developed and published by Steel Crate Games, released August 16th on Switch and PS4, August 17th on Xbox One for $14.99. Find yourself trapped alone in a room with a ticking time bomb. Your friends have the manual to defuse it, but they can't see the bomb, so you're going to have to talk it out. Fast. Cole, tell us about it.
I think I almost put number one up for adoption after this. So we co-op this shit. And the way that this works, you mentioned before you played it on PSVR, and everybody's kind of like isolated because of the headsets. We played it on Xbox, obviously. And so one person looks at the screen and is responsible for defusing the bomb, while everybody else looks at the manual. You can either print it out, or you can look at it on a computer or on a phone. And ideally, if you're not going to cheat, you're cheating bastards.
Achievement whore, cheating bastards.
Uh-huh. The person defusing the bomb is not allowed to look at the manual. The people with the manual are required to some way, somehow, not look at the TV. So in our case, the way that number one and I did this is I sat in my chair facing the TV. She sat in her chair with her back up against mine with her laptop and looked at the manual. And then we had to just talk it out between us.
That's a smart way to do it.
Yeah, it was actually really neat. She even played it again later by herself with a friend, and she had a friend on FaceTime. We don't have Android, or we have Android, not iOS. So she was like doing the face chat though on Facebook.
Oh, that's a cool way to play online with this game.
So she had given her friend the link to the manual so that her friend could see it on their phone, and then they used I keep wanting to call it FaceTime. They were video chatting. Good enough.
FaceTime.
Good enough. And she was playing on the Xbox at our house while her friend was at her house. And they were talking it out back and forth. So the way that this works is that the bomb has different places for modules. And the earlier bombs only have, one, two, or three modules. It's very easy. You have a good amount of time, somewhere around 5 minutes for most of the early ones. And ideally, you want to describe each module as its own individual puzzle. Then you'll want to have the person with the manual looking up that puzzle's rules. So if you're trying to defuse a module with wires, then you'll want to say, okay, well, it has six wires and two are yellow and four are white. And then your partner will say, where is the yellow one? And if you say it's on the bottom, and then she'll say, okay, well, if the yellow is on the bottom, cut the third wire. Or if the white is on the bottom, cut the second wire. And that's how you talk it out to clip the right one. Once you've cleared a module's rules, it gets a green light and you can move on to another one. You can pick the modules at any point. You can switch back and forth between them before completing them. It's just that if you don't clear all of the modules before the timer hits zero, boom.
Boom.
Everything's over with and you died. Fuck you.
Kaboom.
Do it again. There's some really interesting puzzles, but there are also some that are just really fucking difficult. Like, I think we had 7 or 8 bombs blow up in a row before we really managed to get through the maze. The maze modules are horrible, and my daughter was so confused. And she was just like, I don't get this at all. And so we just kept letting the bombs blow up until we got one that didn't have a maze.
Did you take turns? Did you try guiding her through a maze?
Yes. It didn't work that way either. She was just like, she was like, so the manual is all in black and white, obviously. And so I was trying to explain, because the maze ones have colored circles and like, oh, you're trying to get the white dot to the red triangle. And she was just like, I don't understand. There's no red. I can't see red.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, for the love of God, this is where the circles are. And yeah, I was just like, it was a terrible time in our mother-daughter relationship.
It sounds like it was a fun, terrible time, though.
It was fun, at least. The puzzles get harder. The Simon Says one, by the way. Puzzles get harder. They just get more complicated, but they're all really doable if you just talk them out. Sometimes you just know you're going to have to fail a couple of times until you get the rules of a new module and really start to understand how to play it. Then, of course, it starts throwing in extra distractions. An alarm clock will start buzzing. The lights will flicker out. The room will turn red. There's all kinds of random shit that can happen to just make your heart go, what the fuck did I just do?
Which is great for people with anxiety.
I have horrible anxiety, and so I'm just like, why is this beeping at me?
See, now imagine doing that with a headset on and being in your own little world.
No.
Yeah, playing it in PSVR was fucking fun and stressful as hell.
No, thank you.
So it sounds like you had a good time with it. So $15 on this one. What do you think of it?
I definitely give this one a buy. I think some of the most fun, too, comes from trying to figure out how to play it with people. Like, it would have been really cool if, like, we had gone so far as to put each one of us in a different room of the house instead of just sitting with our backs to each other. So you had to actually yell a little louder. Oh, or maybe, like, because you're yelling, you might pronounce things. They sound a little different when you're a redneck and you're yelling.
Mom, the white button. The white button.
Ma.
Ma.
So it would have, you know, like it just would have been. Or when she come up on with it, you know, a way to play it on her own with a friend. There's a lot of opportunities for ways to play this game.
That was really genius to do at FaceTime. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, I was proud of her. She's like, oh yeah, we had so much fun. I was like, oh, okay. Thanks for giving me fodder for the review.
Seriously, doing your job for you.
Yeah, I like my kid. That's why. That's what saved her from being put out on the porch with a Frida Good Home son.
Trade for Jacob.
He throws rice.
Oh, man. Next game to talk about is called Fall of Light Darkest Edition, developed by Runeheads, published by Digirati, released August 14th on Xbox One, August 21st on PS4, August 23rd on the Switch for $14.99. Fall of Light is a story-driven action RPG set within a world consumed by darkness. You are Nyx, an old warrior who has embarked on a dangerous journey with his daughter Aether, an indigo child who radiates luminescence. Only together will they be strong enough to complete their quest, reach the last place on Earth still touched by sunlight. Yeah, only if they're strong enough.
Oh, boy.
This plays a lot like a Dark Souls-style game with an overhead isometric view. The game starts off, you and Aether need to journey out and find this place untouched, or that's still touched by sunlight. Everything is dark, everything is gritty, everything is kind of blocky. Not the prettiest looking game, but you know, I can overlook stuff like that. You progress through, you eventually get a shield, you get a weapon, you get a lantern, and then you come across enemies, and then the game starts to get bad.
Oh no.
I'm going to be the first one to say I hate giving negative style reviews to games, but I struggled big time with this game. The combat was incredibly clunky. There is a lock-on system that seemed to sometimes work. There would be times I hit the lock-on button and it would lock on to the enemy in front of me. Awesome. Let me circle around him. Let me do a dodge roll. Let me attack him. And it works okay. And then sometimes I'll hit the lock-on button and nothing happens. Or I'll hit the lock-on button and it locks onto a guy 20 feet away that I'm nowhere near. So I have to unlock and just, you know, go as good as I could against the guy I'm fighting. Combat is very Dark Souls-ish in that there's a heavy emphasis on dodge rolling, on parrying. I couldn't get it down at all. I tried my ass off. Parrying in this game felt near impossible. There's even tutorials that if you get far enough, the tutorial pop up saying that if you attack at the proper time, you'll parry your opponent's attack. I have attacked at every millisecond imaginable compared to an enemy, and I don't think I've ever parried a single attack in this game.
Ouch.
I don't know if I'm timing it wrong. I don't know if I'm doing it wrong. I don't know if this is user error or if the parrying mechanic is broken. I honestly don't know.
Maybe they left the parry in, or the hint for the parry in, just to see if anybody paid attention, but you can't actually parry.
I wouldn't be shocked. The game is brutally, brutally difficult. As you would expect in a Souls-like style game, you're going to expect the tougher game. I have no problems with tougher games. I just played Dead Cells the other week, which is very difficult, and I gave that an overwhelming buy it rating. This game felt unfairly difficult, where, you know, it has the Dark Souls trappings of if you go to a bonfire area or if you go to the consecration area and you heal up, all the enemies come back. Which sucks when there's a boss you need to get to with a half a dozen enemies in between you two, and you have four hits that you can take, four or five hits that you can take before you're dead. And the one enemy, it felt like no matter what I did, no matter how I dodge rolled, no matter what I attempted to do, I would always get hit at least once on my way there. I never got to that first guardian with full health, ever. And I say that because I got to that boss guardian 15 times before I was able to kill him.
Ouch.
This is the first guardian in the game. The very first guardian. 15 times I died. That is not an exaggeration. That is a frustration.
That's excessive.
Especially because, you know, I would do well enough attacking, dodge rolling. He had some kind of special ability where he would kneel down and these fucking fireballs would come shooting at you and you had to dodge roll perfectly to avoid them. You had to pretty much dodge much earlier than you would ever expect to dodge just because of, I don't know if it's the hit detection or what it is, but there would be like four or five of them in a row and you had to time it so perfectly that if you dove too early on one, you wouldn't have enough stamina to roll again and miss the next one. And those goddamn fireballs alone killed me at least 10 times.
Wow.
It was an exercise in pure frustration with this game. The game, I will give them credit. When we first started playing it, there were some graphical issues with it. There were some hitches and problems. It has been updated, so props to the two developers. From what I could tell, the game was made by two people, so that's an accomplishment there alone. They're updating it. They're working on it. They're working to improve it. I would love to see this game have some form of, I don't want to say an easy mode. I'll just say a toleration mode where I can actually enjoy the game and not be unbelievably stressed out trying to do anything in it.
Yeah.
You know, add extra checkpoints if you have to, or give me some form of way to, like, really power myself up instead of feeling absolutely useless against everything. I realize that all games aren't supposed to be, I'm an unstoppable beast, but let me feel like I have a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that seems to be a reoccurring problem with a lot of games these days, is that it's just, they go overboard on be difficult for the sake of saying, well, it's a hard game. Aren't you a gamer? You're supposed to be good at this. Yeah.
I did something I haven't done in years. I threw a controller.
Yeah, that's
I have elite controllers. I'm not supposed to throw a fucking elite controller.
No, don't do that.
I could kill someone with an elite controller. It was just... I have never been more frustrated playing a Souls-like style game, and that might be a ringing endorsement for them. They might listen to this review and be like, this is exactly what we want to hear. We want to hear people get frustrated with our game because it's really pushing them. And if that was the goal, I say well done. The audience that's out there that loves those style of games is going to love it. But for a casual gamer, someone who's looking more for an enjoyable experience, an enjoyable action RPG experience, for $15, I hate doing this. I got to give it a deny it. It is just too difficult, too frustrating, and I don't want to destroy my I don't want to destroy my controllers.
Makes sense. I don't blame you for that kind of...
Yeah. Doc in the chat saying they need to be frustrated for the right reasons, and I wasn't. It was pure frustration in a bad way with this one, which, again, I hate doing. I hate it, but... What are you going to do?
It happens. And we've said it a million times before. Like, we know that people put a lot of effort into these games, and we don't take, you know, saying a negative review lightly. I've done a couple negatives this past month. It's been a rough month. And even still, like, I just feel bad for weeks after. I'm just like, man. So,
yeah,
but fix your shit.
Doc Havoc in chat saying, when you finally beat that first Guardian, was your reaction, woohoo, I finally did it, or about fucking goddamn time? It was the second one.
Yeah.
It wasn't a sense of relief and joy. It was a sense of, well, fucking finally, now I get to die to the next thing.
Yeah. Because completing a difficult game and getting through something that's difficult should feel like you accomplished something or you have some kind of reward. And just knowing that you did it, you did something that was holding you back. And when games are unfairly difficult or hard just for the sake of being hard, you kind of get robbed of that. And that's half of the gameplay experience right there.
And you could attest to this. Like, I've been stressing over this review because I don't like giving reviews like this. But I have to be honest in what I'm playing and how... I'm handling it, and it just...
I think it's important to note, we play a fuck ton of games, just on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
And we try to give a review from an average gamer standpoint, but we're not average gamers. We spend a lot of time, and we're pretty good at them. We like them. That's why we're here. So, if you've got people who spend 20 to 40 hours a week playing games, and they're just going, this is too goddamn hard, you did something wrong.
Man, it's not even necessarily too goddamn hard, it's just frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, even the controls, they just felt clunky, things just didn't feel right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's beyond a skill thing. And, you know, because you said it well for a casual gamer, but I think even for more advanced gamers, and if it's just the sake of the controls don't feel well and don't work properly, it doesn't matter how good you are.
No.
You're not beating that shit.
All right, we're going to give Cole a little break and a rest with her voice for a little bit. We're going to bring in Chris Taylor to talk a little. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing all right.
Doing well?
Yeah. I've been buying a lot of new Switch stuff and then playing Skyrim as usual.
Nice.
Yeah.
But you got two games to chat with tonight.
I do. Yes.
And one of them is a Switch game.
It's true.
It is.
And so I did play it.
Let's start off with that one. That is called Unexplored Unlocked Edition, developed by Nephilim Game Studios, published by Digirati. Released August 9th on the Switch for $15 even. Descend into the depths of the Dungeon of Doom and complete your quest. Steal the Amulet of Yendor from the fearsome dragon and make it out alive. Unexplored is the roguelite that feels like a roguelike. An accessible yet challenging action RPG that has won praise for its revolutionary level generation tech, The Dungeon of Doom awaits. Chris, what is Unexplored?
Unexplored is a game that I wouldn't have highlighted the fact that it has a procedural generated dungeon as the main feature. That's kind of a common feature now, isn't it?
I think it's the tech that they used for it. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, it certainly adds to the load time, so that's all I have to say about that. Maybe it's because I've been playing Skyrim so much, but I'm like, God, for a game that looks like this, it shouldn't take that long. Shouldn't take Skyrim levels of loading time.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I don't know. No. We'll get to technical stuff in a minute. So, Unexplored is a another dungeon crawler, roguelike. I guess they're calling them roguelites now?
Yeah.
Which is, I don't really know what the difference is supposed to be there.
I don't know either.
Yeah, because, I mean, if it has permadeath, it's a roguelike. And this game has permadeath. However, I did notice that if you get gold in the game, it does retain between games, which I wish I would have known when I spent all my gold in the bar at the very beginning of the game.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, because it gives you some dialogue where you're talking to somebody at a bar, and he'll tell you something or, like, randomly give you an item if you buy beers. So I just bought beers until I was out of money, and just to see what it was like. And then when I started my next new game, I still had zero money.
Oh, boy.
So, that's the thing. So, this is a roguelite, which is a little bit different. It stars your hero, who is a cyclops, for some reason. He has one eye, and the game is done at a strict top-down view, where your character, it's like literally the top and front of his head that you can see. So what your hero essentially is a circle on the screen. And let's see, it basically moves like fluidly. Like, so you have a full range of motion and full 360 tilt and things like that. Unlike something where you're actually just moving quickly in different cardinal directions or only moving one tile at a time, which is the usual for this type of game. But, this one gives you, like, basically your full range of motion. And it actually has an interesting little system, which the developer made sure that we knew about when we went to review this. I remember you sending me the message.
Yeah.
And that is that the combat system in this game is essentially you have two weapons, one in each hand, and they can be toggled back and forth, but by default it's a sword in one hand and a throwing knife in the other hand. Now, the left stick moves you, but the right stick actually aims these towards an oncoming foe, and again, full range of motion, so there's no real way to just lock it onto something. You really have to be on the ball in terms of, like, aiming your weapon and such. And then you got your shoulder buttons that will actually swing the weapons. If you swing a sword, it will extend out a little bit and do more damage, but you can also damage the enemy just by running into him, although you will also take damage, so that's really not recommended. Because apparently this game doesn't have, like, an auto-heal thing, like Quest of Dungeons or something.
Nah.
So there's no just standing still and healing yourself. So you swing your sword, or you can throw your knife, and this is where things get tricky. Because if you throw your knife, you have but one knife, and it is on the ground now. So you have to run back over and get it, if you have thrown it. Sometimes it's completely out of sight, so you just kind of walk around where you thought it landed, and then just hope that your character auto-picks it up. Your sword, or it could be, like, I got a spear at some point, actually from the guy in the bar, and it's like the sword, except it extended out a little bit more. It has a little bit of a different range of attack. And what it is about those is that, you know, your melee weapon actually has a cooldown amount of, like, an amount of cooldown time, which is weird. I don't really understand why it's like that in a roguelike. Especially because this game had, you know, it makes no compunctions about sending hordes of enemies after you. And I'm sure that there's some item or something that allows you to, like, actually clear screens of enemies. Or at least if there's not, then this is a super unfair game because you can basically use your weapon once every 5 seconds. And 5 seconds is a long time when you have permadeath and no auto heal and enemies are coming at you. You basically have to make sure that anytime you enter a new area, you have your escape plan all planned out. There's no real sneaking or anything, so you just kind of have to like get through the doorway and just kind of try and take enemies out one at a time as they flood through, and if they flood through too much, then go to the next room and like wait for them there. So yeah, this is a game that instills a great deal of panic and desperation. Fortunately, it does have some stuff that I like. For one, if you have potions in your inventory and you run out of life, you automatically use a potion. So you don't have to, you don't have to stay on top of potions. I really appreciate that. And the other thing is that I really like that this game actually has a true variety of different styles of tiles, if you will. Like, the different dungeons actually look radically different. On top of my own game, I actually looked up, a whole bunch of videos and stuff and saw, like, some other people playing, and actually, this game is rife with, like, all different modes to play this game. There's, like, an arcade mode, which makes things a little bit easier. There's a desolation mode, which makes things more explore-y, less attack-y. That is to say, there's less enemies and less treasure, but a lot more space in the rooms and a lot more, like, running around and trying to find stuff. So that's a little, you know, both of those are a little bit better for different play styles. Like, I would probably do better in desolation. Some other people might like arcade mode better. And then there's, like, hardcore modes, of course. And then there are, like, a whole other set of special challenge modes. And here's where I noticed that they actually have several classes of characters that you can play as that are unlockable. So there's a lot of content in this game that I have yet to see because I've only played the, like, the real, the true roguelike, you know, experience. Which, by the way, the game does the other thing that I like, and that's that it allows you to implant a random seed, which is, of course, the factor that determines different things about the layout and about the enemies and all this other stuff. And you can put in your own custom seed, so if you want your friend to play the exact same game you played, then you can give them the code. Which, nice. To the benefit of the listeners, I seeded it with the word SML podcast.
Nice.
So, if you want to play the dungeon that I played in order to review this, then put that in.
Sweet.
Yeah, so that's the game. It's basically a really hard roguelike. It's got fluid motion, a weird cooldown period for your weapons that I hope gets better as you get better weapons, and tons and tons and tons of modes.
Nice. So $15 on it. What do you think?
Yeah, $15. If you're into the aesthetic and you really want a good challenge and you don't like something like Yodanji, which is more classic roguelike in that, you know, you move a tile at a time and it's just every single enemy will brutalize you. This one's a little bit more modern feeling. Definitely a lot more modern feeling. Now, in terms of pure fun, I still have to give it to Quest of Dungeons because that's still my favorite. And
yeah, I bought that one too.
Yeah, I bought that one on Switch, so that's not even something that's plugging on my own time. But this game is actually pretty up there. I really appreciate what it's doing, and I'm definitely going to be revisiting this one to see what all I can see. And, you know, it's difficult, but it's not so difficult that you can't do anything in it, so I appreciate it. I say it's buy it.
Awesome. Sounds good. One other game with you is called Word Search by Paugi, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released August 7th on PS4 and Vita for $7.99. Word Search by Paugi includes more than 300 puzzles to keep you and your friends puzzling for hours. Up to four can play, connect extra controllers to solve the puzzles as a team, or compete for the best score. Paugi's Word Search puzzles are expertly handcrafted for your enjoyment and are stuffed to the brim with words in every direction. Chris, I'm going to guess there's not much more to it than that, is there?
They pretty much covered it. They did my job for me. Yeah, I covered Paugi before on the Switch, and I really, really loved it. I gave it full marks, and the PS4 version is exactly the same. So, of course, what's going to be different is just things that are different on the PS4 in general. So what they have on this version is, for one, it is a cross-buy, so you can get it on the Vita, which is very nice because this game does the best when you're using a touchscreen. Mm-hmm. However, you know, because you use a controller basically to find the word, and as long as you start on either end of the word, you can get to the other end, which is good and actually assists with strategy because the game is timed. There's not really a time limit, but it does log your time, so you can actually try and improve upon it. If you're the type who wants to speedrun puzzle games, word search puzzle games, I'm sure they're out there. But mostly it's for the cool aspect of the fact that you can control, log in with four players and have a four-player game going, which is excellent for couch co-op if you happen to be able to get a friend on the couch to play video games with you, and what you want to play is a word search puzzle. I don't judge.
But a little this is bit the thing specific, but it's there if
very,
you want it.
Yeah, very specific, but I honestly know people that it would be all in. So, yeah, as far as everything else goes, the music is really bright and catchy. The puzzles are really nice looking. The transparent layer that's on the letters as you trace them doesn't get in the way very well. It doesn't really get in the way, so you're able to, solve the puzzles without, doing that thing where if you do it, you know, in a book with a pencil, where you accidentally strike through letters.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're not good at tracing. So there's none of that. There are 324 puzzles, and they're the exact same puzzles as the Switch, exact same categories and everything like that. You still have the dog that talks to you, through all the menus and the pause menu, pause, P-A-W-S menu. He still gives you the insufferable puns, so those are still back. And like I said, the thing that they add to this for the PlayStation version is that now there are trophies.
Yay.
And, I got the first two or three within about 5 minutes, so it's got some pretty easy trophies in it. And it's a word search puzzle, so I'm pretty sure you can get all of them.
Nice. I guess there's not really too much. Does it use the touchpad on the DualShock at all?
No, it doesn't. I tried. Mm. I tried. It uses one button, and that is the cross button. It doesn't even... what I like in these games, when they have just the D-pad and just one button, I really like it when they assign a backup button, as one of the triggers, the left trigger or something, so that you can play one-handed.
Yeah.
Because if I'm playing this game, I'm going to want to be eating Cheetos, too. But, you know what? It's fine. This is as solid as you can get with this kind of game, and so I always want to recommend this one because, yeah, they basically do everything right and nothing wrong. Everything is super simple. There's no options. The only option is to turn the music on or off, and you shouldn't turn it off. It's actually very good music.
Nice. So $8 on this one. It sounds pretty cut and dry.
Yeah. If you want to play word search games, I defy you to find something better than this. It's very, very good, and you'll have fun with it. And I hope they come out with more because, you know, after you're done with the puzzles, then what are you going to do?
True. Play more puzzles.
Play more Skyrim is what you should do.
Well, Chris, thank you for coming in and giving Cole some relief for a few minutes. We'll let you get back to your Skyrim action. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it up?
Not really. Just, you know, play word search with your friends.
Anyway, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Drunk Fu Wasted Masters, developed and published by Rusto Games, released August 17th on Xbox One for $9.99. Drunk Fu Wasted Masters is a ludicrous, physics-based ragdoll brawler with over-the-top combat, online multiplayer, and customizable characters, if I know how to talk. Cole, tell us, what is Drunk Fu Wasted Masters?
I don't know. What is this thing?
This game is batshit crazy. That is...
my whole experience with the game, I think the whole time we played it, I just kept saying, what is this?
What the fuck am I doing? What the fuck am I doing? What the fuck am I doing? And And most importantly, why can't I stop doing whatever the fuck it is I'm doing?
Why am I enjoying doing this? It's so goofy and that it turns out to be fun. But it is ultimately it's a 3D kind of brawler, if you will. It's more of a party game, though it does have online, and we all know how I feel about online and indies. So,
So that's a buy it, right?
Automatically. I don't even know what it costs yet. but it's I'm having trouble finding the right words. It's horribly ugly, and it's a
intentionally.
Brawler. It is intentionally ugly.
I believe it's intentional.
The worlds are really pretty. The arenas that you're fighting in, some of them are shockingly really nice to look at. But the characters are intentionally ugly. I think at one point I had a character that, for all of its blocky, it's like if Roblox characters tried to look a little more human, but still kept that sharp, blocky look. And I don't even know if that's a proper way to describe it. But at one point my character had on pink bunny ears and a Christmas sweater with a snowman that looked a lot like Olaf, but I forget what its head was. It wasn't a normal snowman. I don't even remember now. And then boxer shorts with hearts on them.
Oh, you went with the heart shorts as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. I went with those, and I went with a mesh tank top. And then, like, some kind of mascot head hat that's like just like a cat head and bunny ear nose.
Wow. It's,
the character customization in this game is fucked up, to put it gently,
but it's funny,
but it's hilarious. It's, your characters all look ridiculous,
where it's what you would choose if you were dressing yourself while you were drunk, which makes perfect sense.
Especially because every character in this game walks, moves, and acts like they are absolutely shit-faced. If you want to try walking in a straight line in this game, it's not going to happen. And when you add in ragdoll physics to that...
While everybody's punching each other around on these tiny little platforms and trying to knock y'all off, it just gets crazy very quickly. And it's fantastic for it. It really is. It was just a lot of fun. You can pick up different items. At one point, I had brass knuckles and was punching a little harder if I managed to actually throw a punch.
If you could hit.
There was another point where I had gas cans in each hand, and I was just swinging the gas cans around, knocking people off.
If you could hit.
If you could hit. And if hitting aside, it's a matter of if you can even find yourself in all the shit that's going down. Like, there were a lot of times that I was watching your character or an AI bot, and I was just like, close enough. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to win this bitch.
Yeah, we should point out the game does have 8-player co-op, or I guess versus/co-op, depending on the mode you play. They have a mode where it's a free-for-all, and then there's a swarm mode where you have to fight off AI opponents until all of the player characters are gone, and then it ends there. Gameplay, to be fair, is quite limited. It's basically go through a timed round, and whoever has the most points wins, or in the swarm mode, just however many people you knock off, the highest number wins, and then you move on to another round. There's no campaign, there's no story. This is just a round of stupidity, followed by a round of stupidity, and you're going to be laughing.
Yeah, you'll have a good time with it while you play it, but you'll probably want to limit your time with it. It will wear out its welcome kind of quickly, just because of the goofy humor, and it is difficult to move it. I mean, it's supposed to be they're drunk off their asses, so you're not supposed to be able to move easily. This is kind of feels like one of those party games, if you were the kind of person who actually had friends that come over. I'm not, but if you were, or if you had friends that you played with online and you all were just shit-faced.
Yeah, this feels like something I want to see Shiz play on a fucked up Friday.
Exactly. That's pretty self-explanatory, and that's kind of how, like, it feels like it's just meant to be played as a joke. Yeah. Don't take it too seriously and you'll have a lot of fun with it, but if you try to, like, analyze it for all it's worth, you're just gonna be a little disappointed and not drunk.
Yeah, so $10 on this one. What do you think of it?
Is $10 too much for a fuck it why not?
Yeah, I think it's too much for a fuck it why not.
Fuck. Well, then we'll just say a heavily recommended try it, Because I do think the fact that there's not, you know, not any substance beyond it. You're going to play it at a party for like 15, 20 minutes and you're good. You know, but beyond that, you're probably like, okay, we're done.
Yeah, this is something that I don't see myself playing for an extended period of time. But every now and then, I'll be like, you know what? I wonder if anybody's online. And I'll just jump on and I'll do a bunch of ground pounds and I'll ragdoll slap a couple of people around online. And I honestly hope this game takes off well enough that there is a solid online community, because the times I was playing online, it was smooth, things were working well, and it was just funny as shit watching
all of us do nothing. We didn't have any trouble with lag or anything, and we were having a good time.
Yeah.
So I think this is one of those games that could benefit from the Game Pass boost.
Yeah. If Rusto, if you're looking for a box quote at all, here's one for you. This game is fucked up in a beautiful way.
I like that. I agree with that.
Awesome. Well, that is it for this episode. Cole, thanks for just gutting through it.
I did my best. And I'm sorry.
Hey, you have more courage to go through with no voice than pretty much any other co-host who's ever been sick in the past. Would probably just bitch out and be like, can we record another night?
That's estrogen power, bitches.
But thanks again to Tim for coming on and chatting rassles with me. It's a shame you couldn't be there for that, but I guess you wouldn't have said anything anyway.
No. But, I saved my voice for this.
I'm so happy that you did. So do you have any final words to end the show? Something that would sound really funny in your voice right now?
Oh, gosh. No. I don't know. I already say so many words funny. What am I going to say that's going to sound even funnier? White truck? That's as good as it gets.